do I sound so terrible sometimes?
Hey, hey, that's the planet. Looking.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm muted. I couldn't take that. I had to shut that off. And again, like I said, I was saying, I don't think, I don't know why it doesn't play that well over this particular conference. We have a meeting in Sunday here, and that song played pretty good, but we're going to skip the song. Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, April 16th, 2018. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. Our access code is 449-389-POUND. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send questions, that's plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Again, it's questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find the banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Tonight's scripture reading is going to be in Matthew 26. We'll pick up where we left off. We're in verse 57. We're going to read 10 verses. Matthew 26, verses 57 through 67. Well, that may be 11 verses. Okay, 26. Did I say 57? Hold on a minute. I got that messed up somehow, I think. No, I don't. 57, okay, through 67. Okay, and they that had laid hold of Jesus led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. But Peter followed him afar off onto the high priest's palace and went in and sat with the servants to see the end. Now the chief priest and the elders and all the council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At the last came two false witnesses and said, "This fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and build it up in 3 days." And the high priest arose and said unto him, "Answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witness against thee?" But Jesus held his peace, and the high priest answered and said unto him, "I adjure thee by the living God that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God." Jesus saith unto him, "Thou hast said. Nevertheless, I say unto you, hereafter shall ye see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of the power and coming in the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest rent his clothes, saying, "He hath spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now ye have heard his blasphemy. What think ye?" They answered and said, "He is guilty of death." Then did they spit on him in his face and buffet him, and others smote him with the palms of their hands, saying, "Prophesy unto us, thou Christ, who is it he that smite thee? Okay, that was Matthew chapter 26, verses 57 through 68. Okay, we don't have any particular topic tonight. Again, just a reminder, we did start a Bible study. We had a Bible study going last year for a little while, but we did our first study this past Sunday. So again, anybody interested, it's at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sunday morning. I think one of the things we're going to do, I was talking with Jim, who's handling the non-judicial foreclosures, and all of the non-judicial foreclosures that we've sent in, and we've sent quite a few of them. As a matter of fact, we posted them up on National Liberty Alliance. Anybody who would like to view them, especially those who really has to have done those, you know, put the affidavit in to have us do them. Oh, having trouble finding that site. Not sure what that means. Oh, there it goes. Okay, we got it. Non-judicial foreclosures. And you'll see the list of them, at least you should. Where'd they go? Let me double-check that again. Non-judicial foreclosures. I don't know why they're up there. They're not up there. We did put them, I did put them up there, and I saw them up there. I'll check that and see if I can fix that probably tomorrow. But in any event, once we get that fixed, people who have put in for us to work with them on these non-judicial foreclosures might want to go up and make sure your papers are up there. We're going to bring it before the grand jury. You know, most of these, as a matter of fact, almost all of them, except for the very beginning, a few of them, and actually we've redone a lot of the beginning ones also. So I think we've got everyone that we've done a show cause with. I'll have to go through and check. There might be a couple that we didn't really get to a show cause, and we'll see the paper. We'll have to read the paper and see if it's, appropriate to be able to go forward with a consideration of an indictment on those papers. And if not, maybe we'll follow one pager, giving them the final word that they need to respond and show cause. And but in any event, most of them have had show causes done, and so they've ignored it, and they've robbed a lot of people's properties, and they just, you know, we told them the crime, that this was a crime. We warned them not to do it. We told them if they've taken their properties, they need to replace, give it back to these people, or restore these people somehow to their original state before they assaulted them. And they ignored it. So we're going to take it before the grand jury and ask for an indictment. And it'll be quite a few judges. And I think that's what we need to do. So we'll make an announcement on that. As a matter of fact, I know now I didn't put it there. I put it over in, let's see, I put it over for indictments, I believe. Grand jury, not indictments, but...
it's under the docket, John.
Oh, it's under docket?
Yeah, under the grand jury, down to dockets, and there's about 15 of them listed there.
Well, we had more than that.
That's what we have now, though. We just counted them.
Let me see. I don't see the... it's a word docket we put it under?
Under grand jury docket.
Oh, grand jury docket. Okay, yes.
Go to the grand jury and then drop that down.
Okay, papers, filed evidence... Okay, no, this isn't it. Let's see, habeas corpus, non-judicial foreclosures. Okay, we have posted some, but this, I didn't realize we had some posted up on this page. I'll have to move them away. No, I had a page very specifically for them. Let's see, amendments, no dockets, and it wouldn't be under indictments, I don't believe, yet. Memorandum, should be probably under investigation. Yeah, grand jury investigation. I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 down. And... I think you'll find it there. Yep, you'll find it. NJF, non-judicial foreclosures. Got quite a few of them. I'll go and check the other ones to make sure that we have them on this page. And if not, we'll pull them over here, too, and add them in. But these are the documents that the people should be considering if you're going to come in and sit on the grand jury. We're probably going to call the jury, the grand jury together in the next few weeks. But people need time to go up here and take a look at these documents. You'll find that they're pretty much all the same. So you don't have to read them all. You can read a couple of them. And you'll see, you know, it was a show cause, and they just ignored us. So we'll see what happens with that. Again, we'll call people together in a couple of weeks. I'm not sure where we are with the 9/11 investigation. Have you heard anything, Jan?
I sent out a query today. I haven't got a good answer back yet. I've gotten some things from two people, but there's five people working on it, so I'm waiting to get the answer from the rest of them.
Okay.
What's on the tab, the investigations tab, that's habeas corpuses. There's no judicial foreclosures on there. 24 habeas corpuses. That we filed.
On the where? Where did you see these?
Where you told us to go, the common law grand jury investigations page?
Yeah, go to highlight grand jury and come down to grand jury investigations. Click on that.
Yep.
And you have the 9/11 conspiracy investigation.
Yep.
The third one down, grand jury criminal investigation evidence regarding non-judicial foreclosures. And there's quite a few.
It says habeas corpuses. And they're all listed as habeas corpuses.
Refresh your page. I don't understand why that would be. Because I'm looking at it right now. Look up on the top, on the URL. Is it Common Law Grand Jury Investigations? Is that what you have up there? With hyphens?
Common Law Grand Jury. And they're all habeas corpus.
Refresh the page and see what happens.
I just did.
And the third box down, you do not see grand jury criminal investigation evidence regarding non-judicial foreclosures.
No, it says contempt of habeas corpus.
Okay, let's talk about that tomorrow morning. We'll take a look.
We better. I don't know what's going on.
See how that? I don't understand what that is. I'm looking at it right now.
I don't either.
I don't know if anyone else is looking at it. Maybe they see it, but that's what I see. Okay. Anyway, we'll fix that.
Okay. It's the fourth one, John. That's why. There's one that has nothing showing. See, below that is the habeas corpus. That was the third big list down. That's why.
Yeah, third list.
Well, it's the second because there's nothing listed. There's nothing listed for the title grand jury criminal investigation for the IRS. So the second actual.
Oh yeah, there's one. There's evidence. You should be see one.
Yeah. I see video, but I don't see a big list. So that's the deal. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, there's video evidence on this. There's quite a bit of evidence on this. You know, as a matter of fact, no, there's something wrong here. It's going to the wrong page. But I don't wonder what happened there. All right, I'll have to look at this tomorrow and see if we can't fix this. This is kind of crazy, but we'll fix it. Okay, let's move on anyway. All right, I don't have anything particular to share, so I guess we'll go right to if anybody has any announcements, and then we'll go into questions. Any announcements, Dan?
Well, I was going to announce the... your Sunday meeting, but you've done that twice, so I guess that was the only one that I had. So all I have left is questions and, you know.
Okay. Let's move into questions.
First question. If the unified grand jury helps me file a federal lawsuit for deprivation of rights in New York federal court, and I live in Minnesota, will I have to come to a hearing in New York?
Well, if the grand jury what?
Were to file a federal lawsuit for deprivation of rights in New York.
Yeah,
federal
no.
Court.
Well, we wouldn't do that. Again, the only things that we're doing right now as far as filing are things that eventually can become indictable. And we're filing papers that really show that there is collusion, conspiracy between these judges from state to state, county to county. I mean, it's the same everywhere you go. And they all do the same thing, and they all operate violating the law. So, for instance, the non-judicial foreclosures, it's they've taken away people's houses without giving them a judicial process, without giving them due process. And we're letting them know that that's against the law. Not only that, but also the way these mortgage companies are, you know, taking these homes and then bringing them together and monetizing them and then, you know, selling them off to groups of lawyers or different individuals that will then get a monthly income out of this thing, and they just, you know, just keep soaking the money out of this whole process. And all of that it's a crime. It's a law. It's against the law. And so we've laid this out for these judges and for the individuals who are doing these things. And so now we're going to take them up for potential indictment. I'm sure we'll probably get an indictment, but we'll see what happens once we bring the people together. And we've got to have at least 30 of them up there, maybe more. We're probably going to do the same thing. Well, there's no problem about it. We're going to do the same things for the habeas corpuses. We've done quite a few of them, too. So we'll get them up there also. So, again, here is, again, a no due process. People are in jail without due process, or they're in jail when they've been set up and, the grand jury was stacked and the judge tainted that grand jury. I mean, the trial jury was stacked and the judge tainted the trial jury. And also the prosecutor tainted the grand jury to get their indictments, if they got an indictment. Some people are in jail without an indictment. So all of this is a violation of the law, and it's consistent. They're all doing it, and they're doing it all across the United States. That proves the conspiracy. So those are the kind of cases we're going after. We're not doing the habeas corpuses at this point in time. I don't know that we'll get back to them. I'd like to. But we need more help to be able to do them because they're very involved. There's a lot of work involved in doing them. And so we might get back to that if we maybe get a paralegal or two working with us to volunteer their time to assist us with this. Also, we're seeking after indictments, in cases that are national type cases. For instance, the Bundy Ranch situation that involved a lot of people, a lot of states, and of course it went all the way up into Oregon out there where they were arrested up there and went through trial, then a trial down in Nevada. And in the process of arresting these people, they murdered Lavoie Finnegan, and we did an indictment on that. Went after a lot of key people, the big-name people. And we're pursuing the 9/11 situation where we're going to be considering an indictment. And there'll be others. But again, we're not working with people to go in for a civil lawsuit. We're looking to get in for criminal. We're looking to get U.S. attorneys to work with us. We're trying to work that out through the Attorney General's office. And it's his job to send us, the necessary U.S. attorneys to do the prosecution and to take the investigation further and then come and seek more indictments for other individuals that they discover. We do have a lot of John Does and Mary Does, particularly in the Lavoie Finnegan murder. And there may be some other types of cases. Remember, we're always looking for restitution. Every criminal case should be. That's what common law is all about, to find a conclusion. For every injury, there must be a remedy. And people never get a remedy. It seems that the states and the federal government continue to line their pockets with whatever money they can get out of the case, and they make money on doing different things with prisons and so on and so forth. So everybody benefits but the individual who was offended, who was injured. The injured party is then thrown out in the streets, and that's it. They say, oh, you got to go sue civilly now. No. That's what this whole process is all about, to get justice. And so that's what we're going to be pushing for. So, all these cases, we're going to be pushing for justice as well as, indictments and consideration of what other punishments, if necessary, to apply upon these people. And personally, I like to see judges go to jail, but nevertheless, really, the key thing here is really restoration. And it needs to come out of the pockets. If they can't, if these properties have already been sold and so on, if these people want their properties back, I think they're going to have to take it back and give it back to these people. And then they're going to have to restore the people that they've, sold the stolen goods to. I guess that again, there'll be another case, wouldn't there? I don't know how all that'll work, but again, maybe people are interested just moving on and take the monetary, satisfaction and buy a home somewhere else or do whatever it is that they want to do. So again, we're not doing any other kind of a case. We're trying to get to the place to where we can get the grand juries going in every county in America. And until we hit critical mass, we're not going to be able to do that. And so we're working towards that. We do have 1,000 administrators to cover, 3,133 or 34 counties across the nation. Some of those counties are not very highly populated, and, they might share two counties may share together a place for people to go to court. Because there may not even be a court in some of these counties. You look up in Alaska, for instance, quite a few counties, you're not going to find a courthouse in those counties, a lot of those counties. And there are other places, rural places in the United States. But in any event, we've got about 3,000 administrators. People have signed up to become administrators. We need 4 administrators for every county, so we need approximately 12 to 15, maybe 20,000 administrators total at the most, 20,000. Highly populated counties, of course, will need more than 4. The general rule of thumb is a minimum of 4. 4 should do it in most places. But places like New York City, you've got, a million people in a county or 1.2 million people in a county, and obviously you're going to need a lot more than 4 administrators, and people will have to figure that out, how many they need. We're working on the education of these people. We've got the course that we're working on. It's kind of running slow. But I'm hopefully to get a couple of chapters up there in as soon as possible, maybe in the next week or two. I don't know. But we are working hard to try to get that done. If we can get 2 chapters up there, I think we can stay ahead of the people that are coming into that course. But anyone that wants to sign up for that course, you should register now for that course. That course does require, the support, the financial support of National Liberty Alliance to continue forward. So that's the only course, I don't want to really call it charging for it, but, if you become a member and you're given $5 a month or more, then the course is free to anybody. There's a lot of people that are already, given in $5 a month or more, and, they automatically qualify to go in and take the course. So if you want to register, you need to register. And to complete the registration of that course requires to go to our donation page and give $5 a month or more, and then that will allow access into the course. But again, the course really is at a standstill on the front page. There's nothing up there yet, and we hope to get a couple of chapters up there soon and then try to stay ahead of the curve, so to speak. Okay. I know I went a lot further than what that question was about, but what else do you have?
Okay, the second question. Can a case in federal court have both common law and commercial jurisdiction at the same time?
Can a case in
a federal court have both a common law and a commercial jurisdiction at the same time?
Well, look at equity law is really under the law of the land. It's and ultimately it's common law. It's under common law, the rules of the common law, and so those courts are supposed, those federal courts are supposed to be ruled ultimately by American jurisprudence, and if they read the American jurisprudence and act accordingly, we'll get justice, and those are all common law principles that we find in American jurisprudence. The United States Supreme Court is supposed to watch those courts. They have nothing to say with jury courts. They can't make any second guesses. You can appeal a jury court all you want, unless there's an additional violation of someone's unalienable right by the jury somehow or by the decision somehow or something. They can't be relooked at. You can't get it retried. It's their decision is final. But again, You know, if you have a commercial case and you want to get a jury, and again, a jury would be a common law court and, you know, would not be statutory. And as a matter of fact, no court should be statutory. But in any event, you can get a trial by jury in a commercial case. That would be a contract dispute, but it would have to fall under the jurisdiction of the federal districts. So, you know, that you need to read the Constitution and you'll see what the requirements of that jurisdiction is. It has to be something underneath that's affected by the Constitution itself. You know, that you know, how would I say, you know, something that is in conflict to the Constitution. For instance, any case where you're not getting due process, you could take it into federal court and sue. Now, you may not be able to argue the case there, and but you're arguing the fact that the court you're in, you're not getting due process. And that can shut them down, make them cease and desist if they're coming out after you. And also can give you damages for the violating of that particular right. And usually there's quite a few rights that are violated, so you can, you know, really get quite a few different charges upon them. I guess that's it.
Okay. Next question. Just wondering how we can speed up our responses to the blatant fraud of non-judicial foreclosure. There is usually no demand from the court to have plaintiffs bear the burden of proof, which is lawless. In many instances, the note is securitized and the original Wettig signature is no longer in existence. Why can't we go hard on these? They leave the victim in financial ruin, homeless, and mentally and physically diminished. They have no real leg to stand on, so why are we so hesitant in bringing this to the forefront as the fraud it is?
Well, I don't think we've been hesitant at all, and we have done exactly that. We did show causes on these people, on the judge, and on the individuals forcing the foreclosure, whether it be the tax assessor or someone. I know in New York it would be the county controller, not the county controller, there's someone else, I forget who it is. In any event, there's an individual that would be responsible for the tax foreclosures. Also, of course, on the mortgage foreclosures, same thing. And, yeah, the reason why they don't take it into a court and they try to do this walk around the court with what they call the non-judicial foreclosures, the reason they do that is because they can't really win. They don't have the proper paperwork to be able to win. There is no contract. There is no signature that, you know, created a contract that anything needs to be paid. The whole thing is a fraud. And also, besides that, the original people that made contact with them to get the process together in order to get a home through a mortgage system or something, ultimately, in most cases, have already sold these papers, and of course, they've packaged them together and monetized them, just as you said, and that's a crime. So we've let all of these individuals involved know this, that it's a crime. We laid it out very, very clearly. I think we spent at least 13 or 14 pages going through explaining the problem and the fact that they need to cease and desist. They need to stop. They've ignored us. The next step is an indictment. And so that's where we're going next. So I think we're doing everything we can, and it is clear. You know, the case is clear. They have nothing. They have no proof of anybody owing anybody to anything to anyone. So, all right, Jan.
Okay, the last question is a quote that I used when I was in a private conversation with my county sheriff immediately before he asked me to close off the conversation is a quote that I have read but did not create myself. However, now I cannot substantiate this quote anywhere, but I believe this quote was made by one of the founding fathers. The quote is, When does a man face the pointed end of a bayonet for what he believes? Does anybody know who uttered this quote?
Well, if you go into Google and put a couple of words together, part of a phrase of within that quote together, and put the word quote in front of it, put quote, space, and then a couple of words of that quote, you should be able to find it. I have never not found a quote by doing that. I've always found them. So that's what you want to do. Okay, is that the last one?
Yep, that's the end of them.
Okay. All right, I have nothing particular to share, as I mentioned, so we'll move over to is Brent here? I think I saw him.
Yeah. I got an announcement, John.
Oh, okay.
I've been collaborating with that Cuniverse and Canary in the Coal Mine there, those people from that are from America, England, Australia. And they have a site that they've recently put on that runs 24/7. I don't know how many people know about Q and QAnon, and you know, he's supposedly an operative within close to the White House, and he puts out clues. And it's practically viral now, people following and trying to figure out the clues. He speaks in kind of riddles because he's close up, he's very high up in military intelligence, and he can't just give military intelligence out, but he can say certain things and ask questions in a way that it enlightens people to what's going to happen. And people that are following it, they find out that most everything he says comes true. So it's getting more and more exciting because there's a lot of stuff going on, and this guy and so Q has been throwing lots of stuff in there. So there's lots and lots of people following that, and you can get to it on YouTube by putting in Patriots Soapbox 24/7, and you'll get it. You'll get that. You'll see that that live thing. But anyway, other than that, hang on. I got somebody calling me. I have to get rid of here.
Just to add to that, we do have a page with various news from YouTube. If you go to our website and click on news, you will get a whole bunch of YouTubes. And the latest is on top. And so anytime we find something that's really interesting and informative, we put it in here. So you can go out here. The last one we put up here was Breaking Clinton Aberdeen Pedigate Video Found on the Dark Web. And this is a very, how can I say this? You're warned before you watch this. If you have children, get them out. They only showed one picture, and it made me determined not to want to see this video. So I don't want to see no more. I don't want this embedded in my brain, what these people have done or doing. You won't even believe it. You won't even believe it.
Well, you can't.
But anyway,
that's
the latest video on that, huh?
That video is a smut film. If you did download it, you could get arrested because it shows.
Right. Well, he tells you.
Cannibal
pedophilia. But you can go out and watch that video. But you have to have a way to get out there. And he does offer the way to get out there. But he does warn you: if you download it into your computer, get on your hard drive, you can be arrested for that. You know, but again, there's a lot of videos here on a lot of things that I've been posting for quite some time. I don't post a lot, but when something that's really powerful, I usually post it up. And I know I've missed a lot of them that may be powerful too, but I get what I can get. All right, you wanted to finish up, Gerard?
Yeah, so in the meantime, you know, they get over 7,000 people on that live stream. Everybody's watching it. The Black Hats are watching it, the White House, the government, all of them are watching that because basically it's keeping track of what's going on. It's keeping track of what the president's doing, and it's giving clues to where he's going next. And, of course, they want to know where he's going next because he's hard to figure. But anyway, besides that, they do analysis and interviews. I have an interview that they did. They just released it. John, I'll give you the URL. Maybe we can post it.
Yeah,
but
we'll
it's It's a 38-minute video on YouTube, and it's called Cuniverse Special Report, Grand Jury Indictments Filed. And I discuss our master case and what's going on and why we filed it, and it brings it out into the world. And hopefully this could be what really pushes them to send us those prosecutors and judges that we're asking for, because this is getting out there. You know, look, we're at the point where these judges are ignoring us. And so at some point, you know, we keep filing papers and trying to figure out how to move them and what we're going to do next. But one of the best things that we can do is put a light on it and give it to the public, especially now that all this stuff is coming out. And you know what I realized, John, when I was going through our master case, and he pulled it right up on the video as I went through it, and I showed him how to read the footnotes and stuff, how it's educational. But when we file the case for the Bundys and Lavoie and all these cases and the CPS and the foreclosures, what we didn't realize is that they're all tied into what's going on right now. Look at the child trafficking, it goes back to Hillary. And look, we got her name in there because we followed evidence on that land thing. And what we didn't know when we filed that case, that it was that she was wrapped up in that because of Uranium One. We had no idea about that. Same thing with all the CPS cases that we file these cases. We put them in the master case. We mentioned it. Well, guess what? That was due to the child trafficking. We had no idea what the bigger picture was, but it didn't matter. We were exercising the common law. They were doing bad things. They were taking people's children away for bad reasons, and we know they were kidnapping them and making them disappear. Well, that's what the 24,000 indictments that have been issued since Donald Trump put the December 12th presidential order in. That's what they pertain to. And you see, what happens is our case gives them credibility. They're going to want to act on our case because this has nothing to do with Donald Trump or Sessions or anything else. This is we the people came together and made these claims and put indictments in and gave show causes on the very subjects that they're writing indictments on. Guess what? Donald Trump wants.
Remember that we opened this case for the purpose of creating a depository, and that brings us under the court, and that's key to this whole thing. We have to be under the auspices of the court. We operate at arm's length. They have nothing to do, no business to do with what our business is. They got their business. We got our business. We operate in secret, and then we post publicly, and we can kind of consider this or view these things, if we want, so to speak, as sealed indictments at the moment. We sent a copy to Jeff Sessions for the purpose of achieving some U.S. attorneys at some point in time. We've clearly laid that out to him. We continue to send him copies of everything we're doing. We also send a copy to Senator Grassley with the Judicial Committee. I guess it's an oversight committee is what he's on. And of course, we sent a copy to Donald Trump. And we deposit it in that number, and that's what it's for. You know, this case was never meant to be opened in order to go sue. It was meant to be opened as a depository, a place to put our paperwork, bringing us under the auspices of the court. We're not hiding anything. We're in the public. We're putting it out. We're doing it properly. So it's key to make that point when you talk to these people, Gerard. That's what that's all about.
I did that exactly. I told them the reason we bought a number was for that reason.
And we deposited maybe about 20 papers. Before we even deposited these papers, we deposited about 20 papers, which were mostly done in informations to the federal government, advising them that they were breaking the law and that they need to start obeying the law. We started off with a quo warranto, and then numerous, I think it was about 20 of them altogether, or close to it, I'm sure, papers for informations to correct these people. they haven't corrected themselves. They're still in, running, unlawfully. But all the papers there, the day will come. Go ahead, Gerard.
And so I explained that we ended up having to buy a number. I said, because they wouldn't let us in. Whoever heard of a grand jury buying a docket number? But we did, in order to make the record and put these on. And now our indictments are really not, they're not sealed. They're out there. But look, think about it this way. I brought this point up in the discussion. Even if you didn't think that we had any authority at all to do a grand jury or whatever, we did an investigation. We followed evidence. And we made charges, and we put them in public, and we put them in a court. Now, whether you think
we
have the authority,
up there too. Yep.
That's right. So, guess what? When these people get this, look at this is prima facie. This is it's an affidavit. It's a sworn statement. It's good enough. They should be running with it, regardless of whether they think we have the authority. Absolutely, we do have the authority. We're the people. We have more authority than anybody else. We're above the Supreme Court ultimately, and so. When these public officials get these papers and these indictments, the fact that they ignore them is a crime. They look at you're making a crime known to a federal judge, a federal agent, to these people that have oaths of office. They can't sit on this stuff. It's more of this, it's the reason that we have all this Pettigate and all this other stuff, because everybody's on the take and nobody will do anything about it. Well, I think it's very important to pursue these things and support also this Cuniverse, and they're going to support us. I think we've had a jump in our membership, and we're going to get more of a jump as this stuff goes out, because I'm explaining what we're doing. And, they found our paperwork on the docket, and they were all excited. They said, look at these indictments out with Hillary and this one and that one. And so I explained why we did that. So people should go there and look at these things, and they got 7,000 people on any time, John. It's crazy, and they get he puts a special report out, and it gets 8,000 views in no time. So the one I did today is just out there now. He just gave me the link, John. Maybe we can put it up on the site. But you people should, everybody in NLA should at least go through and listen for what's going on, and look at some of these videos and keep yourself up to date, because you're not going to get it on CNN. You're going to get the opposite of what's going on. You're going to get the lies. So at least over here, you see the stuff that's being done, and sort of an inside look on what Donald Trump and the military intelligence is doing and why. And it's a good way to keep abreast and really understand what's going down. When it goes down, you won't be surprised about, why or when or what the timeline is. So anyway, that's all I got. Look for that Cuniverse special report, grand jury indictments on YouTube. And join, subscribe
and
to
we'll
it.
We'll probably put that on our news page, or do we want to put it on our radio and TV page?
Well, we'll discuss that.
But we can put it on both, really.
Yeah,
so,
we'll
take care
very
of it tomorrow.
I gotta
get up there and fix a few pages tomorrow. So we'll talk about it then, and we'll post it then.
Right.
Okay. All right. That's it. We'll move
that's
over
it
to
yep.
Brent. So I'm going to move to Brent. Brent Winters is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. And Gerard, you're going to take the panel, right? Gerard.
I said, yeah. I guess I was muted. But okay, we're going with Brent right now. Is he here?
Okay, so my hands are off the panel. You got the panel.
Get off
Brent?
Of my panel.
Go ahead, Brent.
Yeah, thanks. I'm here. My comments and opinions may or may not comport with those of National Liberty Alliance, but they're nice enough to let me come on and say a few words. I appreciate it. And we've been talking about the Declaration of 76. Of course, what I like to show is that things don't change. Fundamentally, they never do. The principle never changes. The principle of law, the standard of right and wrong never changes. Just the people are different. And the application may be a little new, maybe in a way it had not been applied before, but never against anything different fundamentally. We're just in an age now where technology has taken over. The same principles apply. I don't care how many regulations there are, how complex the law becomes, the fundamental principles still apply. Thou shalt not steal. That applies. There never will be a time when that doesn't apply. I don't care how much technology they put in place to make it look like they're not stealing, or how sophisticated, how many gymnastics bankers do and politicians to make stealing look legal. It isn't. So we take the Declaration of 76, the first principles of it, and we apply them. And we are instructed by the past, if there's anything the evil empire hates, it is history, knowing the past. Because knowing the past, you begin, when you read history, you understand a little bit about it or hear about it, hear somebody talk about it, it becomes apparent that things haven't changed. And the reactions people have had in the past to abuses, to oppression, to domination, to lawlessness, just lawlessness, call it that. The response that people have had to it, we can read about it, know what works, what doesn't work, what the results will be when you do this, that, or the other. It doesn't change. Well, with the Declaration of 76, the principles of it do not change. The things we face right now here today are the same fundamental problems that men faced when our country started back now over 235, more than 240, over 240 years ago, if I've done the arithmetic right. Something like that, long time ago. Paragraph 15. Our declaration is usually referred to, unlike Magna Carta, it's referred to in clauses. Our declaration is referred to in paragraphs by an accident of history, I suppose. Paragraph 15 of our declaration of 76, speaking of King George III, he says, or the Americans say of him, we say of him, using the pronoun he has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws. Constitution, small c, the Constitution of the United States wouldn't be put in place for another 11 years or so. We'd said last time that this Constitution to which they refer here was their Constitution. It remains our Constitution still. What is it? It's our common law. That's what English-speaking people have always called their Constitution. And our Constitution of the United States, big C, is a brief of common law government. Well, we talked about that last time. We said that this clause shows that not only did the colonists of America have a good constitution in their common law government, but it also shows that it was their zeal, their keen zeal, to keep this constitution pure from strange law pollutants. Pollutants of strange law. Somebody asked a while ago about, can you have in the same court commercial law and common law? Well, sure. Common law trumps everything. I don't care what they drag into court. I don't care what the flag looks like, how much fringe it's got on it, what they claim about it. By the way, never forget, the federal courts have admiralty jurisdiction. Our Constitution grants it to the federal courts. It should be no surprise that the federal courts do have an admiralty flag, because that's part of the jurisdiction of the federal courts. It doesn't mean that they exercise that jurisdiction in all cases. They exercise it in admiralty cases. I realize there are problems in the courts, but I point this out because I dub it as a bit of patriot mythology to say that a flag or a symbol dictates what goes on in a court. That's not true at all. I've watched the courts a long time. Symbols are forgotten pretty quickly. The flag of the United States, even if it's an admiralty flag, it's still the flag of the United States. You'd think it would remind them that they're Americans and they're committed to a particular law, and they've taken an oath to uphold it. But that doesn't seem to always apply either. So let's concentrate on the principles of our law and not so worry so much about the symbols. My word, you go into a federal courthouse, go into a federal court, it's worse than going into a Roman Catholic cathedral in Europe. All the pagan signs in there, all the Roman pagan signs from the Roman Empire, the fasci. You know, I was in a federal court not too many years ago, and I think there were something like 26 expensive brass symbols of that thing, that Roman hatchet, on the walls. Well, what self-respecting American would want to tolerate such baloney? By the way, that was done, most of that, back in the late 1930s under the administration of Roosevelt. But always the symbols of evil, and those are symbols of evil. We are not Romanists. It was quite a fight to get Americans to accept the eagle as their national bird, because that was a national, that was the symbol of Rome, not the national bird, but the symbol of Rome. They didn't like that. And Ben Franklin, I remind you, argued hard for the turkey to be our national bird, not the eagle. And he said the eagle carries with it everything that Rome was. And if there's anything we fought this war about, it was to get rid of Romanism, get rid of the evil empire, get rid of the law of the city. But they accepted the symbol. Does that mean we don't have our common law in America? No, the symbols don't dictate. A Lady Justice, blindfolded, that's a pagan symbol from Babylon. We shouldn't have it in our country. We shouldn't have it near our courthouses. Blind? Well, the idea is okay, but it hadn't ought to be used. Why? It's idolatry. It's contrary to our fundamentals as Americans. We never got along well in America with religious trinkets and junk. And we need to get rid of all of that. And as Wycliffe said, if we want to worship God, do it under the vault of heaven, where free men can consider they have a direct contact with God. Well, this clause shows that our Constitution was good. And by the way, that's the reason we went to war with Britain, was because of our common law. Never forget that. History tries to mask it. It was because Britain, King George, and that's what the Declaration of 76 is about, saying that he is trying to deny us our common law. The colonial Americans, British brethren, had the same zeal for our common law. The British people were like Americans, and the Americans, of course, they said they were British. You can pull these ridiculous shenanigans on the Indians and the Pakistanis on the other side of the world in your empire, but you can't pull them on us. We're British. We understand the difference. We're your brethren. And in Britain, they felt the same way. And they felt the same way toward the powers that be, the people of Britain. Unfortunately, this is the way war goes, isn't it? But they felt the same way toward King George's shenanigans, Parliament's shenanigans, the court's shenanigans. I have an article here from the year 1770, as a matter of fact, published. The London Evening Post, 14 October 1770. That was the most popular periodical in Britain, in England, from London, at the time of the American War for Independence. This is the year 1770, and I'm going to quote the London Evening Post article written against an English judge, well-known judge in England, and the writer for the London Evening Post says this: "In contempt of the common law of England, you introduce into the court jurisprudence unknown to Englishmen, namely the Roman Code, the law of nations, and the opinions of foreign civilians." A civilian is the opposite of a common lawyer. Civilian is an old name for a law of the city lawyer in France or Germany. He said, "You introduce into your cases, into your court opinions, the Roman Code, the law of nations, and the opinions of foreign civilians. These are your perpetual theme. But whoever heard you mention Magna Carta or the Bill of Rights with any respect? And by such treacherous arts, the noble simplicity and spirit of our Saxon laws were first corrupted. The spirit of our Saxon laws. And Justice James Wilson, an immigrant to the United States, a British immigrant, is the one that wrote that our American government is closer to the common law of the Anglo-Saxons than it is the watered-down common law of the Normans, bearing the imprint of Rome. So things haven't changed. That was from 14 October 1770. Our war for separation from Britain's empire was to enjoy our English Constitution, the same common law tradition the English demanded for themselves, as I just read. In a word, our declaration says King George had conspired with the Bank of London and its offshoot trade monopolies to displace common law authority with the law of the city's admiralty power. Yes, admiralty law is a species of the law of the city. Admiralty law is a martial kind of a law. And that's what the law of the city is. That's what Roman law is. The Roman law, the Code of Justinian that now rules almost every country on the faces of our planet, that Roman law, that Code of Justinian, arose originally from the law of the Roman legions. It is a military law, and when the people that hold the levers of power in any country, our country, have their way, they're going to want to have their will to be law. And whatever they want everybody to conform to what they want. It's that simple. What they want. I want this. What do I want? I want to fill my lusts. Leave me alone. Let me continue in my pedophilia ring. That's a stupid. And when I say stupid, I use the word in its technical sense. That's thick, slow, and lethargic, and brainless, on purpose, by the way. That's all you've got. That's what you've got in government. Weirdos and perverts. Are all of them weirdos and perverts? No. But a lot of them are. And it has a way of drawing that kind of a personality. Remember, government produces nothing. And it draws people who aren't bent on producing anything, that want to dominate other people. They can't get respect anywhere else, so they want to be able to speak, and people are crushed or destroyed. Businesses are wiped out. That's what they want, and I get what I want. And then justify themselves. No, I'm not exaggerating. That's why the Declaration of 76 was written. And that is what was going on among the high-placed persons of the British government in that day. And the same thing is true in our own government. It's a constant fight, never stops. But it can be dealt with. We dealt with it once. We can deal with it again. You have to start over. And today, much as then, the general government in Washington, D.C., by its overreaching, using the Admiralty Clause, that's Admiralty jurisdiction, uses Admiralty law to control people and their property. That's true. It's true in the United States today. Yes, Admiralty law is used falsely. Every wet spot out in the middle of a field in the open prairie, the federal government wants to take control of it through the Army Corps of Engineers under the Admiralty Clause. And then they want to take control of all the water that runs into that wet spot. Well, what does that include? Well, that's under the Admiralty Clause, and that's been understood in the past as navigable waters. Well, what's a navigable water? Then the courts say, well, not navigable waters. That's waters that can be made navigable. So what does that mean? That means you can dig a hole in the middle of a landlocked place like northern Illinois someplace. I've seen this. And fill it with water. Put a riverboat in it, put a casino on it, and it's lawful because the state legislature says as long as it's on a riverboat and the water and admiralty jurisdiction is not within the jurisdiction of the state government. That's the kind of stupidity that's going on. And then that has admiralty jurisdiction. Well, if it can be made navigable, and by the way, navigable has been defined since the very beginning as anything as small as a rowboat or a dugout canoe. Well, that's the way commerce used to go up and down the little creeks and rivers of the country. Well, then if it can be made navigable, then we need to take jurisdiction over the water that the little creeks that flow into the things that can be made navigable. But the truth is, anything that ever runs water can be made navigable under the Admiralty Clause. Well, then what if I'm catching rain off the side of my house? It's running down in my cistern or into a rain barrel. I grew up on a cistern. We had a cistern. That was the water we used for the house because it was soft, and my mother washed her hair in it. Soft water. My grandmother had rain barrels and old washing machines and all around her house to catch that soft water. She'd go out and bang it with a dipper, and all the polywags would rush to the bottom, and she'd dip out what she wanted and take it to the house. Well, now they're saying, of course, that's water that could be, it would run into the creeks and the streams and all the way down into the Mississippi or the Missouri River and the Wabash River, and those wouldn't be navigable if everybody caught rainwater, would they? Well, so they take jurisdiction over all that water. I don't want to belittle the idea that the Admiralty Clause is misused. It's been misused since the very beginning. Justice Story, the great hero of our common law. Well, we've all got flaws. People complained about him. Lawyers complained, said, if you threw a corn cob into a bucket of water and carried it into the courtroom, his courtroom, he'd take admiralty jurisdiction over it. It's been a danger from the beginning, but a flag is not the problem. That's all I'm saying. The flag is not the problem. To believe the flag is the problem is to believe in magic and genies and idolatry. Symbols, especially pagan symbols, and once you say that there's power in a symbol, you've become an idolater. Once you've given any credence to the idea by thought, action, or deed, you've become an idolater. That flies in the face of the true lawgiver. We don't want to do that. Matter of fact, you're just asking for trouble when you do that. So don't worry about the symbols which cover our courthouses and overwhelm our culture, have for centuries. Worry about the principles. Don't pay any attention to the symbols. Get away from them when you have to, or when you can. And think about the principle. What is the principle? The principle is, yes, our courts have admiralty jurisdiction, but they're abusing it, just as they did in the days of our separation from Britain. The Admiralty Clause is a species of the law of the city. The law of the city is fundamentally a martial, military kind of a law, one-man show, one-man rule, like captains at ships at sea, like religious priesthoods, like emperors of Nazism, like the emperor of Japan. He was deified, and by the way, Japan was under the Code of Justinian, the Roman form of the code, called the Code of Bismarck, during that terrible time of World War II. It's always the same. It's never changed. That's what the problem is. Hacking around the limbs of the tree is not going to change anything, but getting to the root of the problem, laying the axe right on the root, pulling it up by the roots, that's what will get at the problem. Thus, the government's lawful use of admiralty works to deny common law rights. That's true. I better quit, but I wanted to bring up one question that somebody wrote in and emailed me about. I've been listening to these presentations. I'll just mention it briefly. It was a well-thought-out question. That's why I want to address it. But he said this. It had to do with how does the federal government take jurisdiction over the Second Amendment and the militia clause, or the militia of the several states. What does the federal militia have to do? How do we have a federal militia? Well, the answer to that is there is no federal militia under the Constitution. There's only state militias. The state militias can be called into the service of the federal government. This is common law, by the way. It's a little different than England because England didn't have states, but the militias, the common law, operated fundamentally the same. They called them the Furds. But here's the other thing I wanted to bring into focus. People say that the Second Amendment only applies to the federal government. Congress shall make no law respecting an established, no, that's the First Amendment. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, and that's about Congress, as all the Bill of Rights is about the federal government. Fundamentally, that's the way it started. And the whole idea of the Bill of Rights was to have a limit on what federal government could do and not interfere with the states. The Bill of Rights wasn't applied to the states at all. It wasn't thought to be. It wasn't intended to be. But the federal government, since the 14th Amendment, has, since World War II especially, one by one applied different provisions of the Bill of Rights to the states, especially from the First Amendment and freedom of religion. But that's all pretty thin, frankly. But there's one application of the Bill of Rights, of one amendment, that's not thin at all. As a matter of fact, it's required. Our Constitution requires by necessity that the federal government enforce this provision, this amendment in our Bill of Rights, apply it hard to the state governments. There needn't be any corporation through the 14th Amendment. And that, by the way, is the Second Amendment. And why do I say that? Because it says right in the Second Amendment, it's the fourth, the four militia clauses. It says right there, a well-regulated militia, that means regular militia, one that is regular day in and day out. The idea there is the Minutemen kind of an arrangement where men are consistent, always keeping and carrying a gun. That's what that means. But a well-regulated militia necessary to the security of a free state, that's one of the several states, the right, that is the duty of the people, yes, it is a duty, that's what that word means, has always meant, the duty of the people to keep and carry a gun shall not be infringed. Now, why do I say the federal government has a duty to enforce that against infringements of state governments? Because the whole design of our Constitution can be said to revolve around those four militia clauses. And those four militia clauses are meaningless unless the federal government's willing to take a hand in enforcing, protecting the right to keep and bear arms against state government infringement. Because if the federal government doesn't do that, none of those militia clauses are operable. None of them. The reason that Second Amendment is there is so that the other three militia clauses will have meaning. If men don't have the right to keep and carry a gun, then the other militia clauses are ciphers. They're useless. One of the militia clauses applies to the responsibilities of the United States Congress concerning the militia of the several states. They're supposed to provide a set of rules for training. That's their only power, just provide the rules. Of course, the President of the United States, for the states to follow, by the way. So there's uniformity among some uniformity among the statutes that the state legislatures pass. So Congress to provide the broad overview rules. Each state is free then and responsible. It is a bounden duty, an affirmative duty. They have to do it to follow the Constitution. They're not doing it. Is to put into place militia statute. Each one of the state governments, within the bounds of those federal principles or federal that Congress passes, and then there is the Second Amendment. And the Second Amendment then is the foundation of it all. As long as men are keeping and carrying military-grade weapons, then those other two clauses, one for Congress, one for the state legislatures, and then there's another clause for the governors and the President of the United States to explain their jurisdiction and responsibilities in this matter. The federal government, because this is a constitutional question, has an affirmative duty. The federal courts have an affirmative duty to stop any state infringement of the Second Amendment. and that jurisdiction our Constitution grants clearly, unambiguously. Again, they're not doing it. So what do? We petition government. We talk about it. If there's anybody that is involved in the federal courts that's listening, any state legislators involved, take heed. Understand the responsibilities that are given to you as a class of persons and with respect to our common law, respect to our Constitution. Little c, our common law, big C, the brief of common law government. And that's the way it is, as Walter Cronkite used to say. I don't know if he was telling the truth. I don't think that's the way it was, but in this case, I'll say I think that's the way it is on this particular day. Back to you, Gerard. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Very good. Okay, so I'm going to go into the queue and take the first question. Brent is available if you have a question for him. He'll be monitoring. So first one is Crystal Matt. Go ahead, Crystal. You're unmuted. Crystal.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing? I said,
okay.
Oh, she fell asleep. No.
I know. I've been trying to stay awake, and I'm right. How's everybody?
Good.
Okay.
What's going on with you?
Okay. Well, they sent me, this attorney sent me, and I'll give his name's Krausner, and they're all a part of this big Ponzi scheme up here. They've been stealing people's homes left and right. There was a big meeting up here last week, and I mean, a lot of the people that was in the courthouse, everybody showed up at City Hall.
They don't like that.
Oh, no, they did not like that. As a matter of fact, they had subpoenaed these attorneys about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the same ones that's been stealing everybody's property. So I guess different ones was observing, like, well, how in the world did I stay in my house this long? And they've been coming after me for the past 4 or 5 years.
You're
and
starting
so
a revolution.
Now,
you know that.
No, I'm not trying
I'm
to
sorry.
Do that.
No, well, look, you're pushing back. That's what you're supposed to do. It's your duty. Yeah, go ahead.
When I first started, when I first met you, and I thank you all so much. I forgot the woman who was on there, and she said that when you go into court, first thing you say, am I a public servant? I'll never forget this. Am I a public servant of this court? And the judge would say no. Everything she, because I think she was an attorney general or whatever, out in the West Coast. Then she goes, turn around and look at all the people in the audience and say, is this my jury? Is this my grand jury? And look back at the judge. And he goes, no, I'm the grand jury. She goes, when he says that, she goes, then you say, I would like your resignation. You just committed a treason. That's when he told me to get out of his courtroom. She asked me.
That was P.J. Stewart.
Who was that?
That was P.J. Stewart.
Exactly. That's who it was. I couldn't think of her name to save my life. But anyways, I got the transcripts from 2014, and it's right in there where he committed treason, the same judge. Well, he's been the one, they've been perpetrating a fraud, stealing everybody's property and all this other stuff. And then when I went to court you mentioned about the subrogation, proof of claim, no due process, which, as I said, it's wonderful because we've been learning a wonderful vocabulary. And now when we hear it on TV or whatever, it's like, oh, they're using no due process. Recusing, that's what the judge said to me in that last one. When he asked me who, he goes, I see that you have a lawsuit against me. He goes, who's your attorney? I said, Jehovah God and Jesus Christ and myself. I said, who's your attorney? I said, Jehovah God, Jesus Christ, and myself. He goes, you have a lawsuit against me? I said, I'm here to answer the questions on the subrogation. I said, am I a public servant of this court? He goes, I don't have to answer nothing to you. And then he said again, he goes, well, I might have to recuse myself from this case. You got the transcripts. I sent them over to you. And I had the people there in the courtroom also. And the attorney, and I said, and I also asked for a sworn notarized affidavit from the attorneys, and they received the letter, and nobody has yet responded. Here is the fourth letter from the subrogation, and I would like this case to be dismissed and discharged. And yes, I would like you to recuse yourself from this case because you are being partial and prejudiced, you know. So he said, is that all you have to say? I said, yes. He goes, well, guess what? I'm going to take your house anyways because you didn't mention my name, and I'm not going to recuse myself from this case. And so, but the big problem, well, that property is solely in my name, and I got my warranty deed. And it was funny because at the meeting, one of the other attorneys goes, well, he goes, you've been fighting this for a long time, so they did a short sale. I said, oh, really? I don't understand how they did a short sale when I got the warranty deed solely in my name. And also, I said somebody perpetrated a fraud and put himself as the, what did he put on my deed? Well, actually, what I filed afterwards, it wiped it right out anyways. But he gave himself power of attorney. I said, why would I give him power of attorney, an enemy, somebody I've never met, and he's never invested one cent? I said, personally, he's nothing but a debt collector. So when this executive order came out from President Trump, December 21st, 2017, it's the executive order blocking the properties of persons involving in serious human rights abuse or corruption. My glasses on. Okay, and I remember John mentioning, do no harm. You know? And at the meetings and stuff like that, I said, wait a minute, do no harm. So we were like, yeah, I said, when they're stealing our homes and they're doing all these other things, they're not doing it out of love. And I remember something else. I was sitting there, I was out one day and I saw this sign on this truck. And it says, thou shalt not hurt, thou shalt not kill. It was all about the Ten Commandments. I said, oh, my God, that's it. Do no harm. So what I put together, you know, before the meeting last week, I just made a front copy of the executive order, and I wrote, do no harm, elderly abuse, judicial abuse, abuse of power, serious hate crime. All this is abuse. It's all under do no harm. They're not doing anything that they're loving us. It's out of hatefulness. No proof of claim. No sworn affidavits. Perpetrating a fraud. Illegal foreclosures. Stealing our God-given rights. Stealing our lives, work, and savings. And homes, and et cetera, et cetera. All attorneys are the debt collectors. No contract. You know, and we're putting up right now, I was putting on everything I put into my house because we're going to file some other papers tomorrow. And from the time I bought my house, what I paid down, everything I put into it. And it's over $1 million. And they want to foreclose on my house for only $200. And I said, show me the proof of claim. As a matter of fact, I contacted the consumers. And with this letter here, and I think everybody needs to go on their website, type it, you know, make the copies of it, no proof of claim, and so you can sit there and piggyback off what I put down. And what I did, I gave it to the courts. I gave it to the Superior Court, the Federal Court, the Mayor's Office, the Police Department, the Common Counselor, the Board of Education, all the attorneys. And then, as a matter of fact, when we had that bad snowstorm a few weeks ago, Everybody was calling. I said, guess what? I said, this is what we're going to do today. We're going to contact everybody in Congress from each state and find out if they know about this executive order and that they're perpetrating a fraud and who's signing off on this. Because now, whoever's signing off on it, they're personally liable for it. Just like, I guess, that woman down in New York who was the head of the housing, and she stated that everything was okay, and whoever else was on the board that signed off on it, and they just asked her for her resignation. And come to find out, the places was full of lead, asbestos, rats, people had no heat, and they were collecting money. Do no harm. She did. They did plenty of harm, you know. So it's just like, wow. And when we passed it out, I said, well, so they're doing all these illegal things to us. I said, are you aware of this? Every time, a lot of the attorneys were not aware of it. All the congressmen, Blumenthal, all their offices, everybody's aware of it. I said, oh, okay. And I said, make sure you get their names and you send them the copies, you know, and do no harm. They're there to protect us and for our rights. And I think this is one of the best things he ever signed off on.
I think that's great. Look at maybe you can put a case in federal court using Trump's executive order.
Yeah,
As
a matter of fact, I am under in the federal court under the National Liberty. Now I have to pay $400 to get this case activated. Because that's what I was trying to call, because I didn't know exactly what I need to do.
Well,
but I,
if you're going to file your own case in federal court, they're going to make you pay $400 to file it, yes.
Okay, but we have the papers written up.
Well, no, look, you can move that case for cause into the federal court. The case where they're foreclosing your house, you could use that number and move it into the federal court for cause, and you have to show how they're violating one of your unalienable rights. There's very specific parameters for going in federal court, and it has to be on that issue, which is a federal issue where the federal government will have to force the state to obey the Constitution, just like Brent just explained, you know, with the Second Amendment especially. But when the state violates your unalienable rights, the federal government certainly is the higher court to push them back and make them do the right thing. And the only thing they're supposed to look at is not the ifs and buts of your case, the facts of the case. They're supposed to look at the facts of the violation of your unalienable rights, which are not necessarily the facts of the case. You know what I mean? It's due process. Where do they violate your due process? That's the stuff you want to put on the federal case in order to get it into the federal court. And you could discuss that with John Moore, how to word.
Because we got it together already.
Mm-hmm.
There was something that was put together under the NLA. Now, can I just put that, file that and have this amended to that, and I'll pay that $400 to get it activated? I want to know exactly what I need to do.
I don't know exactly. You're talking about attaching it to our case or filing your own case?
I have a case already filed, you know, it's attached to, I need
to
speak.
We filed for the foreclosure, you mean, and you're on your
right,
house.
Right.
And that's in this case, basically.
Right. You have that. Right.
Right. Right. I don't know. I'm not sure on that if it would be, you know, look at technically you should be able to come in under that. The only problem is, at this point here, we got Judge Kahn saying that case is dismissed, even though they're still accepting stuff in and putting it on a docket. And we did give him a writ of error and said that he couldn't dismiss it. It's still sitting there like that. He hasn't corrected it. That's the only thing. So they may not want to move on it.
My case is dismissed?
No. The master case that we put in, the NLA case.
Right.
Judge Kahn said it's dismissed because you didn't get an attorney within 30 days. Well, we didn't agree with that. We gave him a writ of error and told him to back off. And he didn't do that. He just, when the 30 days was up, he says, this case is dismissed because you automatically dismissed because you didn't get an attorney. And, of course, we wrote him back and said, we don't need an attorney, and you're wrong. We wrote him a writ of error. But, nevertheless, he still has that up there that the case is dismissed, yet the clerk is still filing our paperwork on the docket because the clerk knows better. You know what I mean? But we have a problem between the judge and the clerk. So if you're going to file and you want them to move on it, you might be better off doing your own federal number and paying the $400 to move your case through, even though you can cite.
Okay. And the question, I could use the exact same information.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I could also amend this because now with the executive and also these pointers that we just put through on here. So that would be great. So I'll just follow through and I could file it right here.
Yeah.
And that's when I, okay. So I'll put that in.
I think that's a genius stroke putting in Trump's executive order and applying it to them. They're going to die.
And everybody's been filing it. And as a matter of fact, we made about 50, because all the money I had, I just made copies. And everybody, and I saw, I put it in bold print, do no harm, and then I just wrote those down. So now everybody's thinking, like, wait a minute, this is me. Yes, and I said, contact them. I said, you know, I gave them the number, and everybody with the National Liberty Alliance, and I said, go on your website, the students and all, you know. But and now people are like, wow, now it's making sense because everybody's going through this. I met a lot of people yesterday. I was at a function, and I always try to keep a, you know, I got to make some more of these copies up, and I've been passing them out because everybody's going through the same thing, you know, or with the kids or, you know. They're stealing people's businesses, and they're kidnapping elderly people. It's a lot of mess, you know.
Yep.
But the most important thing, I said, be careful what you sign off on. I said, well, all the people that are making and signing off on these decisions, I said, well, you have to be in the spot. You know, so be careful what you sign off on, because you're going to be held accountable. Because after this, I said, not even the taxpayers are going to be liable. You are going to be liable for this because you did it knowingly, willingly, and you signed off.
Right.
You know.
Well, that's very good.
Yeah.
Let me know
and
how you
we,
make out.
Oh, as a matter of fact, this other one, there was, I guess. They were trying to do some undermining or what, you know, making some deals. And I said, do no harm. I said, I forgot what it was. They had something they wanted to do and under the kids' umbrella and their money, and, you know, robbing the children of their education and transportation. And I said, do no harm, you know, but you can sit there and pay this. And I said, remember what you're signing off on, you know.
Yeah.
So one of the guys goes, what does that mean? What are you talking about? I said, well, here, read the executive order. And so that guy goes, oh, I ain't signed off on nothing.
You're a troublemaker, Crystal.
Well, no, it's not that. But, you know, the people are going to be aware. Now they got different ones coming in. They're hiring. I said, be careful what you sign on, you know, because the ones who are doing the dirty work, I said, I'll never get back in the 70s. When they had the feds in there and they arrested a whole lot of people, but it was the ones that didn't know any better that signed off on the papers. And I'll never forget when I was, you know, I was like in my late teens or whatever, and one of the ladies I worked with, she goes, if you don't understand something, don't ever sign off on nothing, because when you sign off on anything, you are going to be held responsible for it, you know?
Right. Right.
So, and it's so true. When in doubt, and when they make you sign something, I'm signing this against my will under duress.
Right.
Per order
stuff.
And then, as a matter of fact, one guy, he was horrible. The guy had so many personalities. And I said, we can't do this. And he goes, I told you to do it and sign. So I wrote per orders of so-and-so, date, time. And I said, this is illegal, and it should not be changed. And I said, under duress, I am signing this per orders of. And I brought it to him. I said, please sign this. You know what he did to me? He ripped it up in front of my face.
Yeah, well, of course. That's what you expect.
Yeah.
Well,
but
very good.
Said, but I'll let you know, because I'm going to get these other things going, and I will get those paperworks up there. So I'll just go to the court, and I'll just file for that here. All righty.
Right. All righty. Nice talking to you.
Does it sound okay?
Sounds good. Just how you bring them under that executive order, you know, word that good.
That's beautiful.
You know?
And as I said, because we're going to try to put it together, I just written up real quickly for that meeting last week, just so, you know.
Right.
And
yeah, perfect that and maybe send it to Jim or John and let them look at it, because you want to get that right. That's what will really scare them. I think that's a great idea. Okay.
Yeah. And also give it to – everybody needs to bring it to their courts, bring it to their city halls, the town halls, the police departments. Bring it to all of them. It was funny when I brought it to the town hall and the city hall, and I gave it to the finance director, said, make sure the police department, the fire chief, everybody. And I said, are you aware of this? And they all looked at each other. I said, oh, well, here. And they go, can we have a – I said, well, you can go right on your website. I said, because – and I said, also, can I have the attorneys, the city attorneys? So make sure they all get that, too.
Unbelievable. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to move on now to the next person.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Crystal. Yep. Okay. Looks like Linda from Virginia. You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Yes, Linda from Virginia. I always like listening to Crystal.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Okay. Well,
we need more people with her moxie, you know, to get in the court. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. I'd like to follow her case, but I don't know, you know, people. Anyway, so my I was in sort of full-on proceeding, drafting my federal case, and you know, my case, no due process, no notice, unwarranted search, unconstitutionally vague violation notice and criminal summons, and then no evidence submitted, not even a single piece of evidence was submitted at any time. And despite that, I was found criminally guilty and fined. And so I was working on the case, and I was drafting it. I was drafting it as a 1983, really, and individually. And also due process and the unwarranted search thing and all that, the things that I just named. But and also, there was no administrative hearing, you know, given. So I ran across another situation where there was a property on another property and was told that code enforcement went in there and told the owner that all the wiring was bad, and that there was an issue with the garage. But anyway, basically terrorized her. She sold it at a fire sale price to one of the minions, I guess. And there's a local group of contractor unethical group, I guess, and they kind of act like your best friend and then find out everything, and then you know, so there's a network of these people And then I was told that the owner was a man. The man that bought it was like a carpenter or something. So I got the address and started checking into it, and it turns out that the owner is a banker who lives in a million-dollar property close to D.C. So there was that, and I'm leading up to a question here. So we have these networks, these loose networks of people. I can tell you my own story, but it's very similar, and it's connected to the same people. But so there's networks of people, and the courts, when you go to defend yourself, the courts are failing to exercise justice, and in most cases even hear the facts of the case, and it's decided in the government's favor, no matter, you know, what the circumstances are. And then it's worse because
this is a case where the government is coming out after you, right? They're acting as the injured party, because they're saying,
well,
you have violations on your property.
Government. It starts with code enforcement, and then it goes to the courts when you try to defend yourself. And and then it's worse because I've been through the general district court, I've been through the circuit court on appeal, all that stuff, and they just continued to treat everything with disregard. You know, no matter, like I just read, no due process, no notice, no unwarranted search, the unconstitutionally vague violation.
So this is all in the county court, the state court. So you
haven't
hit the federal yet, right?
Yeah.
They're never going to give you any kind of reason.
Yeah, but here's the problem. So I'm drafting this federal complaint, and I was following a case out of Florida because she had filed she put dogs in a car because they were going on a short trip and they didn't want the dogs together. So code enforcement came on their property because of the dogs first, and then it went from that to they went on the porch and looked in their windows and started taking pictures of the inside of the house. And they charged her with animal cruelty and something else. It was probably a code violation. But anyway, she wins on appeal, but she's a retired lawyer. So she wins on appeal, and she's ticked off about the whole thing, the way, you know, that she had to go through all this. And she ends up going to federal court. And so I was going back and following up on some cases, and I just happened to follow up on that. Well, it turns out that she lost. And not only that, but they turned around and came back and billed her for between $5,000 and $6,000 for having to defend the case and the transcripts and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So not only are you looking at filing, so you've been charged wrongfully or whatever. You go to defend yourself, you have to pay the filing fee for the court, and then you're facing possible, recovery costs from them billing you for defending yourself.
Well, she took this to federal court, is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
And then then she lost in federal court, and then the other side, they billed her for court costs.
Yeah, And so the government bills the citizen who tries to defend against their heavy-handed trampling of their rights with their codes.
Well, that look at the federal court is not charging. It's the defendant. The defendant. Now, I don't know how she sued them. Did she sue it the town, or did she sue them personally?
It makes
a difference.
Yeah,
see, that's a problem, and I don't know that that's a good idea to sue the city, because that's what you end up with. How can the city be an injured party, really? I mean, that's ridiculous, you know? And the thing is I think you're better off suing the person personally. You start suing the cities, and you know, that's a fiction, and it puts
you
in.
Oh, no, the 1983s were against the city and each of the government people individually.
So who's suing for the court costs? The city? Who's getting? Who wants the court costs? The city or the individuals?
I guess it's the city. I'm not sure I can answer that, but I'm pretty sure it was the city.
And who defended the people? The city? That was taxpayers' money that defended the people? Or did they have to defend themselves? They shouldn't have been able to come in. If you're suing them separately, individually, how can they get their court costs and their court defended by the city? They should have their own lawyer, and they should have their own court costs.
She's a retired lawyer.
She was, right.
Yeah,
but I'm saying that the court, the local court, is suing for the court costs, for the federal court costs that they had to defend themselves. But besides,
yeah, the bottom line is you think you're going to go file a federal case, and you don't know that they can come back and charge you thousands and thousands of dollars for them having to defend against your case. And the things they did in her case, like I said, they took pictures of the inside of the house. They kept coming back on the property time after time. It was just numerous times that they came back to, you know, check on things, I guess. And There's another case out of California that's similar. There was a woman that had a rental, and she had the renters had chickens, and they told her to get rid of the chickens, and she told the renters to get rid of the chickens, and they didn't do it right away, but they did. And then after that, the city came back and billed her again $6,000. In that case, the city had hired a private law firm to do these things. But it's not an isolated case, you know, it's happening. So that you know, people have to be fearful of trying to defend themselves.
Well, it seems to me that if they're going to bill you, that they would have to sue you also. I don't know. You know, I don't know if you lose a case if they can automatically charge you the court costs. And I mean, maybe if they put that in their defense in a wherefore clause. Now, I don't know how they can have a wherefore clause when they're the defendants. You know what I mean? It seems to me they'd have to start a new suit with that clause in it. I know in some of the city things they say that they're going to bill you. And they say that up front, which is, I think, is them trying to intimidate you from, like you said, from defending yourself. But there's something for Daisy here, because I don't think they can just automatically do that. It seems to me.
Well, they're doing it. They're doing it.
Defend yourself. No, but it seems that it should be a separate case.
I think they just do it within the case.
Yeah,
and
I don't know about that.
To me,
Brent knows more about that. I don't know.
To me, they're just creating an expanded system of extorting the people, you know, but here's my thing. It seems to me that the courts are complicit in this scheme of taking private property.
I don't know how you lose a case in federal court when they're violating your unalienable rights. I don't get that. But were you saying something, Brett? Go ahead.
Just make a point. If you remember the old song, Janis Joplin, I think it was written by Kris Kristofferson, freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose.
Right.
Now, I'm going to make a point here.
Oh, that's reassuring.
Well, I'm going to make a point on that statement that is applicable to the battle that's being fought. There's nothing more scary in a fight than a person on the other side that doesn't have anything to lose. I mean, he didn't even care if he dies. Matter of fact, he may think dying is better than living. You want to fear a person like that. And it's also true he has nothing left to lose. That's freedom. You can fight to your heart's content if you're not worried about dying. And that's also true in a more limited sense. If you don't have any property to lose, you can go into court and fight and not worry about them then suing you back and taking it from you. And that's why it's important, if you're going into that battle by trial, because that is what they'll do. They'll try to take everything you have and come back and say you owe them attorney's fees, money, $100,000, $200,000. I've seen it. The way to beat that is to not own anything. That's the way to beat it. They can't get what you don't have. 100% of nothing is nothing. So that means that you have access and use of everything you want to have, use of your equipment, your hard assets, your soft assets, but you don't want to have title to it. In other words, you want to put a plan in place for yourself that protects your assets, And the way to protect your assets is to have full use of your assets, but not own your assets. And there are a lot of people that have done that for a long time, centuries. It's still being done, and that way you're judgment-proof, to use another word. If you're judgment-proof, go ahead.
Is that the incorporate thing? Or?
No, I wouldn't advise incorporating. I'd advise entrusting your property, though. I would advise entrusting your property, and beside that, even beyond that, beyond protecting your assets and becoming judgment-proof, then when it comes time for you to leave this veil of tears, you don't have to worry about the lawyer stealing all your property through probate fees. It passes naturally to the natural recipients of your bounty, whoever you want that to be, your heirs.
Okay. How do you find out about that? How do you find out about doing that?
Well, you need to talk to somebody that understands such matters. Some people call it estate planning. Some people call it asset protection. I suppose it's kind of a mix between the two, but you're in the state of Virginia. So you would need to talk to somebody there. And if I knew somebody there, I could direct you to them. There are also ways you can do it yourself, though, if you go to the internet. But you'd need guidance. You need somebody that will look things over for you if you're going to try to do it yourself and say, well, I think you've got something here, or I don't think you have anything but a whole lot of paper and writing. It just depends upon whether you get good guidance. And we all need good guidance. You were just talking about a lawyer that went into court, didn't know her backside from a $7 sunbonnet, thought she was going to beat these people. They came back and took things. Didn't have sense enough to keep her windows drawn. Didn't know the cops in the community. Probably never been to court. Lawyers are people often that don't know anything about things like that. So we all need, no matter how educated or experienced we are, we need to help each other. You know, just talking helps. It's kind of enjoyable. Not enjoyable. No, fulfilling to listen to some of the stories that are told on these Monday night calls. I've seen a lot of things, but there's always something else I haven't seen, and then people talk and little things they say. It's good to know the lay of the land, and I'm learning as I listen. But at any rate, that's one way to do it. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. I don't know what he meant by that, but I know what it means when I think about it. It's true in one way if I take the words for what they mean. And if we're fighting a fight,
well, after I thought,
as you said, go ahead.
I thought she had a good case, and then after, of course, reading the decision, I realized that the dogs gave them cause to enter the property, most likely emergency situation or whatever, and then they could go to knock on the door, and then I did not know about the open window thing, where they can, if it's an open window, no curtains or anything, they can look through the window. But then I was like, what about taking pictures of the inside of the house?
Well, this is all questionable from start to finish under the Fourth Amendment. They say they can do all those things. Sometimes they can't. Depends on the circumstances. Sometimes they can't. But all I'm driving at is if she didn't own anything, she couldn't lose anything. And there are asset protection. And I'm not bringing an answer to that problem. Once you go into combat with them, you can count on doing two things, either winning or taking them for a long, ugly ride. Winning is usually a little far-fetched, especially against the government nowadays. But you can take them for a long, ugly ride. You can fight, you can scratch, you can bite, you can kick. When you go into combat, and this is true for war or for a fight at home or with your neighbors or your family, whoever you're fighting with, there are only two things you can take from them. You can take their will to fight from them or their ability to fight, which goes with their will, or you can take their means of fighting, their will or their means. And even people that study such things say that in combat, whether you're in war or in court, success, the level of success is in equation form, success equals, or the level of success equals, will to win times means provided. Will to win times means provided. And if you don't have the means, you don't have the money, like most folk and most of us, to carry something like that, pay lawyers and all that. The only thing you've got left is will to win. And you can drag down the other side's will to win if you just hassle them to death. You can't outpay, you don't have the means. They've got lawyers, they've got money, but you can wear them down. You can, to where they just fade away, you know, sometime. Not always. I'm saying it can happen. But in both of those cases, you have the will to keep trying to fade, make them go away. If you don't own anything as a technical matter of law. In other words, if you don't have title to it, but if you do have benefits to it, and that's the very definition of a trust, you hold beneficial title but not legal title. You're not the owner of the property. And so that'd be fundamental. Yes, go ahead.
When it comes to a code enforcement issue, if you don't own the place, do you really have standing to go to court against it? They'll say, well, you don't own it. It's against the owner.
No, you make an excellent point. Yeah, you make an excellent point. But I'm glad you brought that point up because that's important to consider. But at the same time, you can be trustee of property like that and have standing. It depends upon the state and what the courts will let you do. But as trustee, you can go into court, and even though you own the property, you may not have any of the beneficial interest in it. That's another thing, too. It goes both ways. You can do it one way or do it the other. And the property is protected because the title split. That's a complicated – well, no, it's not really complicated, but it's if you haven't heard all these things before, it is. But your observation is astute and important. And that's the one thing you got to think about when you're doing stuff like that.
Well, you just have to stay away from the property jurisdictional issues and stick to your constitution. Look, as a tenant, you have certain rights. And if they come in and violate your unalienable rights, forget about the property. What about your rights? That's what I would stick to. If it was a code enforcement thing, I still would go through the due process. How did, like she said, maybe they didn't have probable cause to come in or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? I don't see ever filing a federal case without knowing those things. Look, you should not go into federal court unless you know you're going to win. And if you don't know the, you know, as far as what their probable cause was and all those things, and you're not sure of that, then you got no business filing the case, I think.
Does anybody ever win? It seems to me that
don't hear
you
about
know,
the reason is you don't hear the winnings because they hide them, because they don't want anybody to win. So when they win, they settle out of court. Sometimes they pay them and give them a non-disclosure agreement. They're not advertising their losses, believe me.
But the other
thing,
too,
it just seems to me like we would hear something on you know, some of these. And uh-huh. you know, but there is harm. There is harm. People, they are going out and charging these people, including myself, criminally. And what that does is then you cannot pass background checks. My line account, my line of work was accounting. I cannot get a job in accounting now because I can't pass that background check. Or actually, I can't even fill out the application because it asks me, you know, well, they say it in different ways. So there may be some I could do and some I couldn't. But there my thing is there is harm. There is harm that's happening. And
oh, that's right. And another thing, too, is like in a 1983 case, for example, Section 1983 of the Civil Rights Act, that's the permission from the federal government to sue the federal government if they violate your rights. Well, in those cases, the courts have tried to figure out, and they've had a hard time doing it, what does it mean? How do you know whether somebody's won a case like that? All these different scenarios come up, and you can't tell who wins. I've been to court a lot of times. I just said, I can't tell. I can't tell if I won or not. I got this, but I didn't get that. He threw me this bone here, but I didn't. What's going on? And so the courts have tests, and they don't call it winning or losing. They call it prevailing or not prevailing. Either you prevail or you don't. That's not winning or losing. And the reason I say that is I've seen cases where things have gotten so ugly. For example, what they did to you is ugly. What they did to this gal you described, it's all a violation of property rights and ugly. But I've seen cases where federal agents and state agents have broken into people's homes and just knocked people around, just physically abusive, and then throw them out of their house, lock the door, and chain it shut, wouldn't let them back in. It wasn't even a foreclosure case. They just wanted to intimidate the people to get at some other people. But when things get like that, when things get like that and they get that bad, then sometimes it pays to go to federal court, not because you think you'll win, but because you want to put the fear in them and say, wait a minute, this is a guy, we want easier pickings. We're not going to abuse him anymore. It gets in the newspapers and stuff. I've seen cases
right.
like that. Yeah.
I've always said that about exposure. I've always said
exposure,
that.
Exposure, yeah. And then that's what they fear more than, or as much as anything. It's a political thing. They fear the politics of it, and especially in federal court, even more than state court. State court's bad enough, but in federal court, it's bad. Anyway, I didn't want to interrupt you. You started to say
well,
something.
Well, I just feel like what they're doing, though, is they're using codes to trump our constitutional rights.
Correct.
I guess that's
exactly
how to get
what they're doing.
To.
That's exactly what they're doing. No question. And that's happened.
And it's not a hole.
That began with Franklin Roosevelt. I don't understand that. It boggles my mind why people make heroes out of these people. This guy was dangerous to the hilt. And the things that he decided to do, I don't know who was behind him, who was pulling his strings. He was nothing but a political animal, had been since 1900 about, a little past
really?
Then. Oh, yeah. I mean, he was nothing but a government hack. That's all he'd ever been. And
Benjamin,
you're
saying Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin
no,
Franklin.
Franklin Roosevelt.
Oh, Franklin
he,
Roosevelt.
He pushed the idea that regulatory codes have the presumption of constitutionality. And before that, it had always been the other way around. If you challenged a criminal code or a code or a regulatory code, a bureaucratic code, like an IRS code, the burden was on the government to prove the constitutionality of the code. But you go into court now, since Roosevelt, you go into court now, and the burden is heavy on me or you to prove that the code is not constitutional. You got to prove the negative. I'm not saying it's a sleight of hand. I mean, they'll tell you point blank right up front, this is the standard, and you got a rough road to hoe. That's why lawyers don't challenge codes in court. You're wasting your time. You're going to lose. Because the presumption is against them. And I like to quote Lord Acton. You know, Lord Acton is the one that said power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And he was an ardent Roman Catholic. He was from England. And during his day, back in the 1850s, the Pope came out and solidified that doctrine. They'd been practicing for centuries that when the Pope speaks, when his buns are sitting in the chair over there in the Lateran Council, when he speaks, he can't make a mistake. That's what their doctrine is. It somehow sanctified everything he said. Well, Lord Acton was a Roman Catholic, and he said that's crazy. He blew a head gasket. He said,
exactly.
he said there's no doctrine so monstrous as the doctrine that says that the office sanctifies the man. The office sanctifies the man. That's what that doctrine is. That's what the doctrine is that says the police officer can't be sued. That's the same doctrine because he has a uniform on. The office sanctifies the man. It immunes him. You can't sue the judge. He's immune. You can't sue this guy. You can't sue that guy. The office sanctifies the man. And then he said this. He said that if there's any presumption that the law must recognize, it is the presumption that says that the more the power, the more the presumption is against the power holder. He said because powerful men are almost always, listen to this quote, this is Lord Acton. He said, powerful men are almost always bad men. And even when they aren't bad, you super add money to that. And they arrogate power to themselves. And then he said, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's that famous quote. That was all the context of it there, and that's why he said all those things. It started because of his religious sensibilities to what the Pope of Rome was doing. And we can play that out because the Pope of Rome is a political dictator. That's what he is. That's all he's ever been. Not all. That is what he is. And there are many of them in the world, many of them in our country today. Bureaucrats want to wield that kind of do what I say, shut up, or we'll beat you into the mud. That's their attitude. That's the attitude of the police state here in America at every level. And I hope one of those bureaucrats, one of those police officers are listening, and they catch hold of the idea and say, wait a minute, you know, that makes sense. I don't want to be that kind of a person. That's where we need to be. Well, because we're being put upon very hard. I got a email recently from somebody in Germany, and they were fascinated with the idea of the common law. Fascinated. And they wanted to know more about it. I'd have had a professor at Suffolk University School of Law tell me. He goes every year to Europe, and he teaches common law. That's what he does. That's what he likes. And the German students, the young people over there, are interested. And I dare say it's probably because the common law, as far as we can trace it back, originated among those Saxon people. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know why, but I know this. In this country, I don't see the same fascination with young people over our ancient heritage, the faith of our fathers, what has made us what we are and why we're here. We ignore our past. We're to the point now, clearly, that we're talking here, and we're saying, well, no sense going into court. I mean, I hear those comments, and I understand those comments. Why should we go into court? Well, we should go into court because it's the right thing to do. But you don't ever count on winning. Now, when we've come to that point, things are bad, and we're at that point. We don't even believe we can go into court. We have a mindset we can't go into court and have a fair shake, have a 50-50 chance. I used to tell people, this has been 30 years ago, wanting to go to court, I'd say, well, in America, even if you're right, you've got only got a 50-50 chance of winning. And if it's true, yeah. I can see it. But you do have a 50-50 chance of winning against the government. That's not true in the rest of the world. It has never been true in the rest of the civil law world, the Code of Justinian world. Everything is in favor of the government. Even when you have a suit against another private party, the government has to get into it and decide what to do. Well, in America, we have that 50-50 chance. I don't see that we have that anymore. I have to be the predictor of probabilities. I'm not a prophet, but I do predict probabilities, as all of us do, and try to determine what we should do next. Now, what should we do next is the question now. We know what the evil empire is doing. The question is now, what are we doing? I have people come to me, and for years they'd say, they'd be all upset. The government had done like what they talked to you. They'd done. They busted in, Fourth Amendment violations, tossed the place, tear them, just violate your sensibility. It's like you've been raped. I'm not exaggerating. If you've never had it happen, then you know what I'm talking about, because this is your home is your castle, crying out loud. The government doesn't understand it that way anymore. That's the old common law castle doctrine. But they come in and do these things. Then people come to me and they tell me the story, and they'd say, they can't do that, can they? And I'd say, well, now, wait a minute. Let's think a minute. Let's talk sense. You say they can't do that. Can't means unable. Now, they've proven they're able to do that because they just did it to you. So the question isn't whether they can or can't do that. The question is, what are we going to do? Forget them. They're goners. They've joined the evil empire, and they're piling up wrath against wrath to themselves. They're flying and spitting in the face of the God that made them. I don't want to be in that position. Be thankful you're not them, and be thankful that the evil empire hasn't gripped you into its clutches yet that far. Although I would suspect the evil empire has gripped you into its clutches to a certain degree, because they have a way of doing that with most all of us to a certain degree, and then they suck us completely into the vortex if they can. And a lot of Americans, the mindset out there is scary. Are you one of those people? Ask yourself, how far into the evil empire have I been sucked? And really stop and contemplate it, because you have been. Don't kid yourself. And you're the problem. You're part of the problem, I should say. We're all part of the problem. This is our fault. We're the ones that did this. What is supposed to be our response? And our only response to this madness that we see, which is lawlessness, is true law. There is no other response that will work. True law. So I say to people, try to encourage them. I say it now. Get busy. I hope that it grips you, that the desire to learn the true law. Learn it. Because you cannot guard it or do it unless you first know it. And the power is, if you do those three things, learn, guard, and do the true law, that's the true power that could possibly turn things around for all of us. Most of what we do is wasted effort. We're coming at it, as Paul the Apostle says, we're beating the air. He said, when I box, I don't beat the air. I try to make punches land. I try to be effective, and the only way to do that is to be prepared. So let's be prepared. Let's don't go in without a plan. I realize you get into a fight, you get hit in the nose, plans go out the window, and you start swinging. But at least you've been trained a little bit. That's where we are. By analogy, that's what. And, of course, anybody that's been hit in the nose knows how that works. That hurts.
Well,
your mind quits working. Go ahead.
You said the young people. I think they are interested. The problem is they haven't been taught.
There's nobody to teach them. Nobody knows. The teachers don't.
But they are interested, and I think a wave is coming. A wave is coming. I really do.
I see it.
You know, I think we're in the process of reclaiming our Constitution and our rights. And it's just a wave.
We definitely are, no doubt about it. Look, we have to move on. I'm 25 minutes. I got a whole queue here.
I want to talk just a couple things. I definitely want to talk about immunities some other time. And I was just going to mention that, Brett's earlier talk caught my attention, because I watch Bonanza every day. And the reason I watch it is because every other show or whatever, some shyster is coming along trying to take what they have. And I mean, if you watch it, you see that. And so that was back in the Wild Wild West days.
Yeah, 1800s, yeah.
Maybe
get back in the queue. If I get through these people, you'll get another chance here, because we got...
Well, I just want to say, nothing has changed. It's like nothing has changed, since then.
There's nothing new under the sun, for sure.
All right.
I will. Thank you. Yeah. Hey, Brent, just another thought here on
Hello.
Your subject.
I got a question.
How you doing? Yeah.
Are you listening? Oh, okay. I didn't know if I was on.
I just want to say something to Brent before you start, okay?
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm here.
If you know the law, and you say that the only thing for lawlessness is the law, so when you're sure of the law and somebody shows up at your house and kicks the door in and tries to intimidate you, let me tell you what, in my mind, that's the time to resist, even with deadly force, because now you're going to court for murder. And guess what? You probably got a better chance of getting off for murder than fighting with the code enforcement officer. he went in his house and he beat him and he had to kill him. I think I have an easier time defending that than going in and facing their statutes. If he's so stupid that he thinks he can come in my house with deadly force and he doesn't have a warrant and he's not doing things right and he's just backing the impetuous, guess what? He's going to get hit. And at that point,
Well, if he ain't got a warrant, then you can shoot him dead because he's trespassing on your property.
Well, my point is that if you know that you're right, I mean, the people in my experience that have the worst time is like when CPS shows at the door and they stand there and wring their hands and they act all scared. You jump up and down and say, I'm going to sue you and this and that. Well, they turn around and walk out a lot of times. They want an easy target. They don't want a hard target. It's even in nature. You know, animals won't attack something that they think is going to hurt them, and people are no different. You have to put up a strong, you know, even some of the statutes we have with property, like squatter's rights, one of the requirements is that you defend it with deadly force. Hello?
Yeah, that's right. Right. Oh, yeah.
So I want to get that idea out there that if you really understood the law and you really understood that this guy is violating your unalienable rights in such a way that he's leaving himself open for deadly force, you know what? That's his problem, not your problem. You know?
Well, that's what's going on all over the country, why they want to eliminate the Second Amendment. That's exactly why, because we're empowered that way and they want to take it away.
Right. People are getting fed up to the point, like Brent says, when people have nothing to lose, you know, and they lose
it.
You know?
Right. Well, this is my question. I'm working on an old child support case. And now that I'm learning the common law over the last year or so, I've found out that they have actually did this case illegally. They violated my due process rights from the beginning, and I have been filing affidavits against the courts, at the state courts. But I'm beginning to find out that state courts can't do nothing for you. You have to go to the federal level.
Yeah, and especially on your unalienable rights. They can't offer you the remedy. I mean, and they're technically... they're the judge, jury, and executioner in that case. It's the state.
Right. And I'm finding this out. You know, I have filed countless affidavits against the circuit court, and then I filed a habeas corpus for against my liberty that's being taken still to this day, and on the appeals court of this is for the state of Wisconsin. So this is what the case is in. And the state of Wisconsin, I filed a habeas corpus. Well, they denied me right off. They denied me. That's my constitutional right. They cannot suspend it. They did it anyway. And they gave me a state statute and a state case law of why they could. And I wrote an objection. You cannot do that. That's against the federal law. This is a federal procedure. You violated my rights again. And Now they're saying that they don't want to hear from me ever again. They're not going to take any more of my responses. So I've been working with a guy, one of our members, and I want to bring this to Unified Grand Jury. And we got some paperwork. I got an affidavit done, and we want to file it with the Unified Grand Jury to get for help. But if it gets filed in New York, would I have to go to a hearing once it gets into federal court? Would I have to come to New York for the federal hearing?
No, I don't believe so. But the thing is you're what do you mean? You're going to file it under our case, or are you going to?
Yes, I'm going to. In actuality, you know, it's an affidavit that's going to go to the grand jury. The grand jury is going to file it against the court for my due process violation.
Well, I don't know if you heard me before, but you know, we have papers sitting there and we're kind of stalled. And I mean, they're going to answer them eventually, and we're working on that right now. But I mean, you can file it there, but I would take them to federal court in your state. That's how I would deal with them and make them come into the federal court and answer. The minute they get a subpoena from a federal court in your state, that's gonna change their whole outlook right there. They may not even want to go in the federal court with you. I mean, sometimes they'll call you in and they'll have a conference and they'll try to make it go away.
Right.
When they realize that you're serious about taking them to federal court.
Because, okay. You know, well, because I mean, I live in Minnesota, and under the diversity, under the procedure in the federal court, under diversity, I'm not a resident of Wisconsin anymore. I haven't been for many years, and I live in Minnesota, so I have the grounds where I can actually file it in Minnesota against Wisconsin in the federal court here, so I can make them come
and
here.
And I think that's a smart thing for you to do. And that's mm-hmm. and that's even another, you see, that's another thing that's going to make them not want to deal with you and settle with you, because they got to go over there. You kind of
right.
put a hardship on them. And I would do it, because, look, our case is a landmark case. And like John said, it was never meant to sue anybody, although the indictments and the prosecutors could take off. You know, we're doing kind of an indictment, and it's up to them to pursue the case when we get a prosecutor on it, you know, or a private
right.
attorney general or whatever it is that we end up doing. But
right.
I wouldn't tell you to sit there and wait for that to happen. I mean, it could happen tomorrow, don't get me wrong. But
right.
meanwhile, they're trying to stall us just like they stall anybody else. You know, we have a bunch of people behind us, so that's the other thing they fear. You know, they don't like publicity. You know, you start getting
right.
other people involved, and that's one of the reasons Crystal's having some good luck, because she's a mouthpiece, and she's got people following her, and so they fear her, you know, her ability to amass people, whether
right.
they admit it or not. So they don't work good in the light. I would take I think you should take them in your state and drag them over there, and I think you'll do a whole lot more. I'm not saying don't file it in our case, because you can.
Okay.
You know, just put that affidavit in, whatever it is, get a hold of Jim and stick it in there, because, you know, we're hanging a lot of them in there right now, and at some point it's going to get dealt with. But, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You know. And I've been working with Jim. That's who I've been working with Jim Burson. And
right.
we got everything done. We got file done and everything. And it's just that he told me to come on here and ask the question as far as when it gets filed in the federal court in New York, if I would have to come there for a hearing or not, you know, under
no,
that.
No, because,
so.
Look, there's what's happening is your case is going to be clouded under our case, and so you're not going to get your, you know, redress as quickly. You're going to have to
right.
wait for them to deal with us first, and then
right.
they'll get you. So I would put it in there to have it in there, but I would definitely stick it in the federal court in your state, no doubt about it, because that's your best chance at redress right there.
Now, would I have to pay that $400 filing fee anyway, or could I just roll it in as a deprivation of rights, a civil
well,
rights
yeah,
violation?
No, you're on it. You got a case going. You got an index number, and if you word it right, you can roll it in for cause. You have to show the cause of due process or whatever right up front. And like we discovered going into the federal court here, they like to see the statute on the front, like 1983 or U.S. Code. Try to put a whatever fits it. Cite.
Well, it would actually be under the 42 U.S.C. 1983, the civil rights violation.
Right. So
yeah,
make
the
sure
deprivation
that,
of rights.
That, make sure that that's up front, so that when the judge sees the front of the page, he knows that that's what he's hanging his hat on.
Right.
They don't like common law. They don't know anything about common law. And look, we could use a federal statute code as long as it bolsters common law. We don't have no problem with that. So if that's,
right.
you know, like Bill Thornton says, you know, matter trumps form. But if they want it in a certain form, you give it to them, and then you push your matter through the case. You know, if they want it
right.
in a certain bold letter or a certain spacing, you don't fight them on that. You just give it to them. If they want to
right.
if they don't want to call it an action at law and they want to call it something else, so call it whatever they think it needs to be called to move it
right.
through the court.
Right, right.
Because every
right.
court
well,
is different. You know, they got their own court rules and all that baloney that you got to deal with.
Well, and that's the funny thing, because if you really dig into the federal code of procedure that all courts have to obey by, you know, all courts have to be kind of unified in that realm,
they,
because
they
have
do,
to be open.
Right. The federal court is probably more unified than the states. The states have a little bit more ability. Some of them let the judge write their own rules and policies. And, you know,
right.
you can fight them, but, you know, it's another – look, you don't want to take more fight than you're already fighting. It's like Thornton said,
right.
You're a fighter, you want to win. And you
right.
know, we've had them come back at us and say, oh, no, you fall under Municipal Code 50. And we write back and say, I'm sorry, we're not a municipality. We're not going to do that. And they never come back and ever push it after that.
Right,
they make
right.
a suggestion. We object and say, that doesn't apply to us. Look, they're not – then they're following my advice. You know, they throw something out there, but they don't want to defend it. So when you come back and say, nah, it doesn't apply to me, they don't want to come back and tell you why they think it does apply to you. They move on to the next tactic that they're going to – the next thing they're going to stick in your smoke, you know? But
right,
you,
right.
You get rid of that one, you know what I mean?
Yep. Well, I've kind of stuck it to them a little bit, the state, because they've tried to give me a bill for filing fees and all that, and I told them, and I even used the Wisconsin Constitution against them, and I found an article of where it says that I have a right to get my wrongs done without any kind of charges, and the
That's
court
right.
I wrote the article down, and what my constitutional rights are, I haven't heard back from them since. You know, because they can't charge me for something what I have a right to be heard.
Right.
You know, and stuff like that.
Justice.
No, you cannot put a price on justice and stuff like that. Now, and what's really something is from the circuit court, I filed a dismissal. You know, because of they don't have a case, but I don't have the affidavit in front of me here. But anyway, somebody had wrote on it. Denied, failure to state a claim. They never signed it, and it was just dated, and that's it. So now, I wrote a letter to the Attorney General, a U.S. Attorney General, for my state, the state of Wisconsin, and the U.S. Attorney General, made copies of that and said, this is pure evidence of lawlessness of a circuit court of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if it's going to go anywhere.
I just
mailed them today.
Right. Well, that'd be interesting. You know, most of the time they don't like to answer, especially stuff that they can't answer. But it'd be interesting to see what they say.
That's what I'm interested in, to see what they do say, because me filing three different ones, one with the state of Minnesota, so they understand that I got it in a, you know, in public mail. Well, that I take that as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine said, well, I would go to the police department too, say, you know, out of fear, these guys might come after you. Just so they have it on record.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. So I mean, I know the cover sheet, I've seen it, you know, 'cause I've never been to federal court ever. So this will be a new territory for me. But I have tons of evidence, you know, against them as far as my affidavits, because they keep saying they don't have I don't have a claim to file, basically failure to state a claim, even though I've cited many Supreme Court cases and case laws, and they just keep denying them. They just keep telling me that
They're looking for a cause of action, and you have to study the cause of action, make sure that you have them, and you lay them out. That's all. You know what I mean?
When they say
failure to state a claim, you have to show that cause of action, and there's usually, you know, three things that are necessary to have a cause of action. And look, I'm sure that you have a cause of action. You just have to articulate it and lay it out. That way you take the wind out of their sails on that one.
Right. And come to find out that the whole child support thing is a big, huge Ponzi scheme, basically, because it's all about federal funding, federal dollars. Every dollar they collect from everybody in the United States, the federal government kicks in 66% of federal funding for every state. Now, that, you know, now me exposing that, I got that from the Federal Manual of Child Support. It's all the information is against them. It's all right there in black and white.
again, follow the money. You know, it's been said before, and that's why you get the story when you follow the money, and a lot of it is about the money.
It is. It is because, and it's sad because, you know, non-custodial fathers like me get stuck with it, and we don't, and our rights got taken away. How did my rights get taken away? I had rights with that child in the first place.
Right.
You know, I never
right.
signed them away. I never applied for nothing. Show me the proof that I applied for a contract. Show me that I'm under a contract. I have said that to them, to show me proof and show me evidence. They've not responded one iota of nothing.
Right.
Because they don't have anything.
No. No. It's tough.
No. But, in federal court, though, I would have all those affidavits as evidence that they didn't respond to, interrogatories that they never responded to, just totally denied them, basically.
Right. Well, you're talking about due process, so.
Right.
I would put that in there. But, you know, stick to the due process, the first one that they violated you, and I'm sure they did. You don't want to get into the minutia of the case because they're gonna dismiss it. You know what
right.
I mean? And they love to get into that and then put their two cents in and then dismiss the case. But so
okay.
keep it real
so
clean
you,
as far
so
as
you,
your cause of action.
So you just basically want to attack the due process, say, hey,
that's right. Don't even discuss the other stuff. It doesn't belong there anyway.
Right. Right,
because the federal judges know they got it. You know, the state's rights, that's sacrosanct. You know, that's supposed to be above federal rights. But when they violate your due process, then that's the federal court's job of putting them in their place. So stick to
right.
that. Don't get lost in all the other stuff because that's how you lose.
Oh, okay. So you stick to the actual federal jurisdiction, which is your rights
right.
that got violated that the state
Absolutely.
Didn't comply with.
That's right, and forget everything
okay.
else. Don't, and if you mention it, you open the door. So don't open that door up. Just let them stick to that tight area and that cause of action, and don't discuss anything
okay.
else.
Oh, okay. All right, because see, the state stands on that. Well, you signed a stipulation. You signed an order. I didn't sign that document that the court commissioner signed. I'd never seen that document. I signed a document with the mother and a child support official, the three of us in a room. Where did this document come from? I didn't sign it. It was a forged signature. Forgery. You know, because I didn't sign that. You know, and there was no judicial officer in the room. So that is a due process violation. Has to be a judicial officer present
yeah.
for any money judgment over $20. Has
right.
to be. And there
right.
was not. And I never got a trial by jury. And I never got offered representation of an attorney either. So that is a violation as well.
Well, they're operating under different rules over there. So, I mean, you have to bring their feet back in. But I got to get going here. We got a lot of people
okay.
in the queue. So,
okay. But thank you. Thank you. Thank, yep. And
yep.
I'll, you know, like I say, thank you. Have a good one.
Yep. You too.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Yep.
California Fred. What the heck's
wow.
going on?
Hey, you
buddy?
Woke me up, Gerard.
I'm glad I could do that. Go ahead.
These people are putting me to sleep. Hey, that last gentleman that just called, he needs to tune in to Captain John and find out about the birth certificate and removing that child from the court.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he needs to know that procedure where you nullify the birth certificate and the court loses jurisdiction in the state because you're reclaiming that person.
I don't remember who it was, but there was a guy, and it might have been Lentz, Carl Lentz, and he does like a lot of child stuff, and he would go in and say and he'd say, I'm here to reclaim my property, a very short stuff he put in. And people go, he said, no, your child is your property.
Right.
Basically, it's a property right. People don't understand that they're violating your property rights when they get between you and your children. And the birth certificate is what? It's like it's a receipt kind of that the state owns them, right? Ultimately, it's a bond. I've been told, you know what I mean? So I don't know what his procedure is, but I understand that you have to think of it like property. So to remove him, remove the birth certificate from the court is almost like taking the title away from them. You know what I'm saying?
Gerard, the way it was explained to me is that you don't get the birth certificate. You get a notification of birth, live birth. And
right.
That means the child has a waiting period, I think it's 30 days, and if the child is not claimed by the parents, then it goes back to the state. And that's where you have to pick up the paperwork and claim that child as your property. Now you understand what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And that nullifies the state's claim that they have any claim on that child.
Right.
That's what I
want. That whole process that you're talking about where you have to claim the child for 30 days, that's fraud. That's all fraud.
Well, it's all fraud. The birth certificate's fraud. It's all about, but I don't want to get into that.
Yeah,
the
I understand.
The reason I wanted to get into the question Q here was because you brought up QAnon.
Uh-huh.
Now, sir, I want to say this so that no one is an injured party out there. Briefly, I was speaking about QAnon before this meeting, and I was going to remain mute on it until you brought it up and you invited people to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I want to say is this. When I was on it today, the 24/7 QAnon, a lot of people were getting on through YouTube, and they were getting viruses. They were being kicked offline. So anybody that's attempting to get on that 24/7 Q line, I am recommending that they have their virus definitions up to date and maybe use an internet browser like Tor browser so they can't be tracked and traced. You know what I'm telling you?
Yeah, I haven't had any trouble, but that doesn't mean anything.
I'm telling you what's happening.
Obviously, they don't want people going on if they're going through that much effort to keep you off.
Well,
right?
Something else happened that I want to make you aware of, too. They had a posting by one of the clowns. You know, the CIA is the clown.
The clown idiot.
The Bureau of Investigations are the faggot bureau. You know, the FFs.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're the federal faggots. Anyway, you know, hey, he was a cross-dresser, right?
Yeah.
He was.
Yeah, well, that's
Edgar.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's why they call him it goes back to the roots. I don't want to be obscene online, but the QAnon, they have their own way of speaking, their own acronyms, and everything's in code. It's hard to understand. It's referencing people like LL as Loretta Lynch or you know.
Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. That's why you got to find somebody who knows how to interpret it and go on their site and listen. Hey, look, you learn it after a while. You know what I mean? You pick it up.
Well, what I'm trying to tell you now is the clowns have posted this big thing where they're comparing anybody that gets on the QAnon with somebody that's normal, that's being agitated, and they're being led down this road that it's going to radicalize them, and they're comparing it with ISIS.
Yeah, well, you know what?
Yeah, I know what, but I want to get my point across here.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm getting at, it wasn't long ago that Muslim Brotherhood president of the ex black sheep of the whole ghetto, you know, he was calling American gun owners, patriots, constitutionalists and veterans and Christians terrorists.
Well, he can't call us ISIS, though, because he created them.
Well, anyway, what I'm getting at is it wasn't that long ago we were considered terrorists. Now
we're still considered terrorists. It hasn't changed. Well, it has changed. Those days are over because everybody is tired of hearing that crap, and they understand now that it's all baloney. Well, I mean, look, unless you're listening to CNN, you know, and thinking that that's real news, everybody knows by now. That's why their listenership is all down. Nobody's listening to them guys.
All I want to do is make this point. Trump reversed that through an executive order. He called ISIS the terrorists.
Right.
But what I'm trying to get at is that the clowns are putting that message out now that if you go to that website, you're considered an active, irrational, soon to be over the edge. So I just wanted to put that out there that you want to protect.
I've been that for about 30 years now. So
I don't care what kind of tail they pin on me. I can shoot back. But the thing is,
they came out and they said, well, if you do that, you get on the list. And they got list of this, and you're on this list and that list. And I said, listen, if you're not on a list, you're no friend of mine. I don't want to talk to you if you're not on a list. How's that?
Well, I'll tell you what, when I look around at the FBI and how they disgrace themselves, for my money, every one of those people should be on a no-fly list. They never should have a secret clearance. In fact, they aren't even qualified to issue parking tickets. Those people belong in prison.
Right. Well,
the whole seventh floor.
Fred, we can hope. Maybe it's going to happen. I can hope.
Well, what I'm trying to say is they're sharpening their knives. So anybody that gets on that website, have your antivirus stuff up and try to get on there anonymously and don't give any information.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to yield and let you get on with other people.
Thanks, Fred. Good advice. Yeah, they're never done with their shenanigans, but that's okay. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. That's all I can tell you.
Oh, wait, there is one more thing. What our lawyer friend was talking about, I believe he was referring to a corporate soul. The Kennedys on Chappaquiddick, you know, when he swam upriver to save his ass from going downstream with a girl?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't referring to that, but I know what you're talking about. But, yeah, there is such an animal, but I don't advise using it because it's corporate. It is a corporation that has to do with religious organizations, but right. We can talk about that some other time. But thanks for bringing it up.
You got to list everything you own, and it becomes church property.
It gets worse than that. But that's bad enough. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't remove it from your. It doesn't protect it. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, a lawyer would probably know, sir. I'm glad you chimed in on that.
Yep. Okay. Thank you, Fred. Okay, we're going to have Ed from Connecticut. Go ahead, Ed. I think you're unmuted. Go ahead, Ed. Ed from Connecticut. Are you there? You've been unmuted, Ed. Maybe we put him to sleep. Or maybe my mic went off. I don't hear anything. Hello, Ed. No? No, Ed. All right.
Yeah, it looks like there you go. Still.
Yeah. Listen, Gerard.
Yes.
Gerard.
Yeah, you there?
Go ahead. It's muting. Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead.
It muted me and unmuted me. Okay, you can hear me now, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, something happened with the system. It said muted, but I kept on it. But, yeah, no, I noticed I'm talking a little bit about the codes and everything. But aren't some of those codes unconstitutional? I mean, they just came up with them in the mid-90s, you know, just some men sitting around in a room and creating a code, like I'll give you an example, like the blight is something that, you know, that's not a way of handling it, fining someone anywhere from $100 to $250 a day. You know, that doesn't solve the problem.
Right.
No, but it makes a lot of money for the government, though.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
but
that's the main thing, yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Gerard.
Yeah,
well, the U.S.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Brent.
Yeah. Look, I don't know about all the U.S. codes, and look, not every code is unconstitutional. Just because it's a code, it can be constitutional when it's written constitutionally on a constitutional right, and it should empower. It shouldn't lessen your power. Now, you know, a lot of those codes were written for the people. Now, I know under the what was her name, the woman that was on the Supreme Court there, she put in a whole bunch of codes and fines actually, under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Like if you tell a company to not call you on the phone anymore, and then you can prove that they called you after you said only contact me in writing, it's a $1,000 or $1,500 fine depending on how it's done every time. And she wrote those codes. Now those are for us, so that they can't harass us the way they were doing and intimidate us. And those are, there's nothing wrong with them, you know. And the codes that we quote, you know, they're definitely constitutional. Now I don't say that they're all constitutional. Now your real purist common law people don't want to use any codes because they think that it drags you into their system. And I don't agree with that. I only get dragged in their system if I want to, if I say so, or I agree to. Just because I quote one of the codes that they're using in their system doesn't put me in that system. It doesn't give me a contract with them or anything else. It's not an adhesion contract or anything like that. You know what I mean? You got to know the difference. And you can't give evil too much credibility, because that's why they get us, because we that fear of, oh, I can't go there because I'll be sucked into that. Well, no, you won't, only if you want to be, or only if you don't know what you're doing, then maybe, yeah. But I don't agree just because you use something like that you lose your jurisdiction or whatever, you know, or because you have a driver's license, you can't go to court and defend your rights because you got a driver's license. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
They'll never tell you that either. Even if they believe that, they're never going to come out and say that.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm just picking out that, just to give an example. Of course, you know, some of the codes are made for us, and I'm not against all the codes. I'm picking out a code specifically on the blight. Because that, I don't see how that solves the problem by fining someone that amount of money. And like I said, this is something that they just came up with maybe in the mid-90s or something. How does that solve the problem to fine someone like that? If they don't have the money to pay the fines, so just 1 week of those fines, they can't pay it, and now that's a foreclosable lien. So that means they could take a house just like that. So you could own the house.
That's how they solve the problem. They put fines on it so they can take it and sell it to their buddies. That solves the problem.
Right. But you see what I mean. I mean, if somebody was trying to get...
And look at even the fines that they give. You know, maybe this is something that when everything else is addressed, you know, if the government gets a fine, why do they get it? Why does it go to... I mean, let's say... You know, I could punch you in the face, let's say, and I could go to court, and they could fine me $450. Do you ever see any of that money?
Right. Yeah. I would have to do a separate suit or something, yeah.
Right, but what right do they have to fine me and not restore you? And they're supposed to be, you know, we put governments in place to protect the weak from the strong, I thought. That was their job, right? So by collecting the $500 fine from me and not giving you anything, how did you get protected? Oh, because that's going to deter me from doing it again? And the only way it'll do that is if I don't have another $450 to spend, right? If I got the money, then I'm going to go punch you in the face again, right? Does that mean as long as I got the money, I can punch you in the face, right?
Yeah. Well, that is that. The inconsistencies of the law. But yeah, it's just if somebody, it's just that, see, it's this blight thing is something that I'm seeing is arising all around this town, a few towns, and there's people really in court, barely holding on to their homes just for this situation. So I was thinking that could be an unconstitutional code or law, and that they just come up with something like that, which it doesn't. No,
isn't it like that is definitely unconstitutional. That's part of what the problem is, right?
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, you own a home, you work your whole life for something, say there's no mortgage on it, and then someone's going to lose it under, because now they're on a fixed income, they can't afford the fine, so now they'll just go, that's got to be the most barbaric thing. We're supposed to be in a civilized society. But look how barbaric that you're going to take somebody's home. Now that person's going to be homeless and go into a shelter. And when
Brent and I had a conversation exactly over that, because we were talking about how he was talking about in how Christ said to the Pharisees or the scribes or whatever with their taxes, how they were sucking the life out of the widows. Because my thing was that, When that situation you're talking about, most of the time it's a woman, the widow, the husband's dead, the place is paid off, and she's in the house, and they're going to steal all the equity out from under her, and they're doing exactly what Christ complained about to the temple, and nothing's changed. There's nothing new under the sun, and so you're bringing it up again. That's exactly part of the problem that even back in the day with the Jews, they were doing the same thing. They were making all these statutes and codes that people couldn't, putting on the people's backs what they wouldn't be able to do themselves, and really they're stealing the equity out. They're robbing the thing that they worked all their lives for and paid off. And, they're giving a definite meaning to that word mortgage, which means a death till you die, morte. But anyway.
Yeah, I tried to get him on, they beat these people down so bad. I tried to get this guy on the call. He's just one town over. And, of course, they go after somebody that's elderly. Because you have to be elderly to probably own your home completely. You don't see them going after people with mortgages. That, you know what I mean? Because then the person's not really losing anything.
Right,
you
think right. That attacks the bank, right? Yeah.
Right. So then it's just the bank might. Yeah, so, but anything you could advise, as I did hear what Brent said before about a lot of these codes are hard to fight constitutionally. But on this particular code, where you're just, it's really not a solution. It's really these people that are put these laws together could really be embarrassed and made fools of to even come up with such a thing, because it's not a solution.
Right.
And like I said, it's a barbaric act to do something like that. And really, the people. There are people already that it's concluded, through the years. And imagine if that happened to them, how would they like it?
Right, right.
But any direction that you would say if this could be, put into a federal court or any constitutional violation for something that really makes no sense at all to do, And here's just one observation. 50 years from now, it won't be handled that way. So what I say, why should we wait? If it's not going to be handled that way in the future, why shouldn't we do something about it now and end the suffering for the next 50 years or whatever they decide, 25 years to make. When enough people are affected, they will make the change.
Right.
But then, but why should there be the waiting? So is there something that you or Brent can think of that someone could, way of getting this into a federal court, so then that would freeze the case in the local court?
Well, a lot of times they don't freeze the case when you're in federal court. You got to ask for the judge to give you an injunction because they'll just steamroll you. They don't care you're in federal court. I mean, if you can sue the actors in federal court, you can slow them down because then they have to recuse themselves and they have to get somebody else. You know what I'm saying? And I've even heard of cases where they refuse to step down. And what do you do about that? You hire some guy to go to, you know, beat him up or something. I don't know. You know.
I mean, they
use nasty tactics. Maybe you start using nasty tactics back. But now I'm not saying to break the law, but. Look, Brett just said, you know, challenging the code is hard because you got to prove it's
unconstitutional. Right, that's why.
Yeah, no, that's why I was listening that, and I popped on because he was saying that it is very difficult to challenge it. But I was just thinking that could just be for something not as significant as this particular code or statute, however they term it.
I don't know what the particular code is, the blight. I've never read it or whatever, but I'll be willing to bet you that if you think outside the box and in the enforcement and the operation of that code, that they're violating rights in numerous ways. And what you do is you bring that in. I'm sure they're violating your due process rights, but I wouldn't specifically go after the code. I would go after their actions to me. And not necessarily say the code was unconstitutional. I would say what they did to me was unconstitutional. You know what I'm saying? You get the idea, kind of, where I would focus on the action of what they did and say there was no due process, this, that. I don't think I would actually say, well, I'm going to take this to court and that code is unconstitutional and fight it like that because, you know, they want their codes to stand, obviously, you know.
Right.
I mean, I would almost try to go after the person, too, because it makes more sense to have a warm body to go after than a code, you know what I'm saying? Because you got going after the city and the court and all these fictitious things that are very hard to sink our teeth into, you know?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, but I didn't realize until tonight when you and Brent were talking about the codes, that it was that difficult. So I think I'll take a different direction and advise some of these people a little different way. Maybe we'll have to get just the people together, come to these meetings, and just embarrass the hell out of those people and say, like, what are you thinking? And just get that. Because actually something recently happened. We did get them to do the there was a WPCA, which is a foreclosure. I'll be real quick. It's a foreclosable lien. We did get them to get a moratorium of 6 months to try to figure out, and they stopped all the foreclosures. Any WPCA, which is a sewer lien foreclosure, has been stopped for 6 months. That means they cannot initiate a new one, and anything in progress has stopped for 6 months. That just happened one week ago, and that was because a public opinion came forward So we'll have to do the same thing with that. But I appreciate your insight and Brent's insight about the codes. I didn't realize it was that difficult on that one. We'll just, and anything you think of in the next few weeks. And I do think it did go federal. I mean, Connecticut is a judicial state. Pretty much any federal court.
Are you there? You kind of blanked out there. Hello? I think we lost Ed here. Well, anyway.
This must be the midnight call.
It must be.
Right on the money.
What time? Is it midnight?
Absolutely.
We got it. The timer just went out. I remember when the Wicked Witch turned the club, the hourglass. That's all you got. It ain't very much. Anyway, it's nice to everybody be here, and we'll catch you next time. Anybody that got stuck in the queue, I'm sorry. Get back in next week, or write the questions in and email them, and we'll try to get to you. Okay. It was a good call, everybody. Thank you, Brent. Thank you, John and Jan and everyone else. And we'll see you next week. Thanks.